anywhere else.
Yeah, I'll be on the other end of it when I leave.
Good morning. I want to welcome you all to the March 10th Napomo Community Services District Meeting. And I would ask you to join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Director Orson?
Here.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Here.
President Mihalik?
Here. And at this time, I would like to open it to public comment, starting with our Sheriff Commander Basti, followed by Battalion Chief Dan Anderson.
Thank
you. Good morning, Commander Basti.
Good morning, members of the board, staff, and public. Martin Basti, Sheriff's Department. A couple things. First of all, I apologize. I was going to get you the numbers, compare 03 with 04 off the memo from last year, but we discovered a couple of problems. First of all, in our call clearance and our call dispatch, what the dispatch call is actually completed with, for example, you get dispatched to a theft, it turned out to be a forgery. Well, those are two, you know, different animals. Also, the arrests, we want to compare the arrest stats by crime, so that if we do have a burglary, we have an arrest for a burglary, we have a rape and an arrest for a rape, then you see that the case is cleared. And secondly, the folks that do our computer thing, we're going right now, we're working on a huge grant. Since 1985, we've not had a records management system. We're still working off a mainframe in our law enforcement system. So May 19th, we're supposed to go live with a new records management system, and that will be able to pull and track a lot better statistics and a lot better deployment and a few other things. So I will have those numbers for you as soon as they can get a few minutes to run that data and make sure that it's accurate. Because we found out in our year-end calculations that the numbers didn't match up, and they found out that the dispatch calls, they were not taking it off of the right area of the computer. So I want to make sure they're correct for you, so I'll get those to you. We did have a couple of burglaries of residences in Napomo. Both those were resolved. One was a neighbor went through, took some minor items, and another one happened to be a relative that came back and burglarized with all the properties returned. But on another note, we did have two commercial burglaries, and those include tools. There was about a $30,000 loss from the rental place from stuff that was outside the fenced yard. Interestingly enough, we got a message on Monday. Long Beach is investigating. They found a containerized cargo thing getting ready to be shipped somewhere in one of the foreign countries. It was loaded with stolen power tools. And for the last year and a half or so, up and down a lot of these big construction sites, the Cuesta Grade site, where they broke into these storage containers and took power tools, and apparently this ring is working up and down California. They're putting them on containerized and shipping them out of the country. So rather than fencing for just normal dope dealers, it's a lot larger. So our folks are working with them on any of our stolen property, along with Santa Barbara also. So. And lastly, coming up June 7th, again this year, the law enforcement torch run for Special Olympics will be coming through Napomo. They'll be leaving in the morning, and they'll come down Teff Street, and it will take the leg from Thompson and hand it off to Santa Barbara. The torch run goes clear down to Los Angeles for the state meet. Our regional meet will be on May 7th with about 800 athletes. There's about 170 from Napomo Special Olympic athletes. And so we'll be doing the torch run, and that's a fundraiser. Last year, law enforcement agencies in San Jose County raised $75,000 for the Special Olympics for all the kids. So if you guys are available on that morning, it's a Tuesday morning, and I won't be running, but I will certainly be out there monitoring traffic, make sure everything's nice and safe. With that, is there any questions, issues, or problems?
Would you repeat the date?
June, should be June 7th, should be a Tuesday.
June 7th on Tuesday.
6th should be Monday. Monday comes in the county in Monterey, mm-hmm. County up by Nacimiento, and it stays overnight in San Luis, and the torch will be lit again and moved through Napomo. We'll hand it off sometime around 3 o'clock to Santa Barbara at the bridge.
On the 7th?
On the 7th, Tuesday. Any other questions?
Okay, well, seeing none, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, and a special thanks to
Mike.
I'm sorry, I do have a second one. I know this is probably beyond your purview, but is there a centralized website to which computer scams can be forwarded? Getting a huge rash of them here in Napomo right now. Fraudulent stuff.
Depends on what it is, because there's several different, I mean, the FBI has some, U.S. Customs, and also local agencies, depending on what the scam is. In other words, if you saw the one this morning in the Telegram Tribune with the lady that was frauded over the purchase of a off-road vehicle, that went through an internet transaction and stuff. So it depends on what it is. There is no central clearinghouse, but anybody that's frauded on the internet can report to their local agency, and then we can forward it to the appropriate one to track. FBI does have the overall jurisdiction on interstate frauds.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, a special thanks to your general manager, Mike, for getting me an email and making sure we had the agenda, et cetera. So it's much appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Battalion Chief Anderson. Good morning.
Good morning, members of the board, chairman, public. Thank you for asking me to come again. I had a couple things I wanted to just pass on. One, a lot of construction stuff is occurring in Napomo and continued growth. One of the things we're doing to stay on top of it is we're again here this month updating all our agreements with the surrounding jurisdictions. We've met with the five cities and finalized that agreement. We're going to be meeting here within the next couple weeks with Santa Maria to finalize those agreements. And basically, they're just going to be a continuation of what we've had, which means that we have their equipment, their truck companies, their engines, personnel at our access for any incidents within the area. So we're going to finish that. Additionally, our annual chipping event that we've been doing for the last several years, we have again scheduled that with their pollution control district. We have them scheduled for April 11th through 22nd, May 2nd through 13th, and the 23rd through June 3rd. We will be getting out flyers, posting it in Adobe Press, and I will try to get some of those flyers left here at the district office also. We are also working with Adobe Press, and we have finalized work. Hopefully this coming month, we are going to be supplying to them statistical information about the fire department. So we should be getting monthly inserts into the Adobe Press on the activity of the fire department and for the public to preview. And last, I want to actually commend the district. One of the things, we had a hydrant test out on Lynn Road. It came back well over the 1,000 gallons. It came out at 1,100, I think, at 60 PSI, which theoretically gives us a potential of 2,000 gallons per minute out of that hydrant system. So it's a good source of water for us, and we appreciate the effort there. Any questions?
Any questions from the board? Mr. Trotter?
There was a town meeting in Black Lake day before yesterday, and one of the things was discussed was the fire department's response to the garage fire that occurred a couple of weeks ago. And
In the Black Lake area?
Yeah. The neighbors thought it was excessive. Now, it's hard to know when the fire department was called. That's always critical to the formula. But have you had any complaints about that one?
I have not received any. I can tell you specifically for that call out there, the engine here in Napomo actually was driving down Teft when the call came in. And so there was no delay in them responding directly to the call. Our engine over in the Mesa was not in the station. They were doing some training, so there was a slight delay in them getting responding, but Black Lake is also the area where both those engines meet, so we had the first engine in there in what would normally be our response time.
And one comment was made about a potential station site on Pomeroy, right near Black Lake. And they said that...
We actually own a piece of property right on the Pomeroy side of Black Lake, yes.
What's the disposition of that property?
Right now it's just being held. Our future growth, what we're looking at for the Pomeroy area is that would be like our fifth fire station site and probably about 20 years out.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Where is your third site?
If everything goes right, our projection right now, we're going to ask the county in the coming fiscal year to purchase property in the Orchard Division area. We're looking at possibly moving our current station on Oak Glen to a site down on near Thompson and Malskow. And then our other station we'd be locating out near the Stanton Los Barros area. And then the fifth one being the Black Lake.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're still in the public comment period, so the public may comment on any item that's under our jurisdiction but not on the agenda for today, and we request that you keep your comments to 3 minutes. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and move to the consent agenda, warrants, and the board meeting minutes for the February 18th and 23rd meeting. Questions, comments, clarifications?
Yes. In the minutes, item B3.
Of which meeting, Mike?
Of February 23rd.
Okay.
Now, again, staff can review the recording, and if I'm incorrect, please just ignore my comment, but I think I'm correct in saying that we directed staff to inform the county that we were stopping any effort to annex lighting or drainage until we knew that the state money was coming back, and at that time we would initiate discussion of that. That's all here, but the sentence before it said we agreed to table efforts, and specifically in my making the motion I rejected the term table because it gave, I thought, too much emphasis on some kind of an ongoing dialogue, which we don't want to waste staff time on.
Do you want something changed?
Yeah. To stop efforts instead of table. Halt, some other word.
Yeah, halt. Cease and desist, whatever.
Yeah.
Larry, I have a comment.
Are there any more, Mr. Wynn?
No.
Okay, Mr. Trotter.
On page 2, at the second to last paragraph, it states, such time that state monies are restored, that we, shouldn't we be the board? Or is it we appropriate there?
Or the district?
Possibly the district that we mean, you know, district that... Okay. The district would be willing to initiate discussion.
That's it.
Mrs. Worsing, did you have any questions or comments?
No, I think they've been covered. Thank you.
Mr. Eby, I believe you had some item.
No, I don't. I got that question answered.
Okay. Okay. Are there any public comments on the consent agenda?
Do you have a copy of the agenda?
Right in the back table.
They're on the back table.
That's a...
Yeah, those.
This is the Humboldt Community Services District meeting.
That's what we're...
Well, she's...
That's what we are.
She's not...
March 10th?
Yeah, March...
Today?
No.
Today's?
Yeah.
For motion?
Source of confusion, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Our regular scheduled meeting was on March 9th, and the meeting was, that meeting was canceled, and we shifted it to today, March 10th.
Okay.
So this is a regular meeting of the Napomo Community Services District.
Parks, were you looking for the Parks and Recreation?
No, actually, it said that there was supposed to be a Napomo traffic here.
Traffic and Circulation Committee meeting here?
Not today.
Not today. Yeah, normally. But not today.
And again, if I may, and our clerk at the front desk might be able to give you some information on that traffic meeting, because she works the schedule for this hearing room, so she'd be able to tell you when the next time they're scheduled to meet here at least.
Mr. Eby.
I move we accept the consent agenda with the changes requested to the minutes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Motion by Mr. Eby, second by Mr. Wynn. We did open it for public comment on the
consent agenda.
On the consent agenda. So, Madam Secretary, would you call for the vote, please?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Percy?
Yes.
President Bernard?
Yes. Okay. Moving on to the administrative items. Item number E1, joint use of excess capacity of district water conveyance facilities. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. I'll just give the board a brief introduction here and turn this over to District Council John Seitz. This ordinance is basically driven by the district's needs to tighten water policy and further protect or do all we can to protect the Napomo Mesa subarea groundwater basin. And that's what's behind this ordinance, and staff feels that it is an important step to take and a clarification as to when and when the district will not wheel water through its distribution system. And with that introduction, I'll look to Mr. Seitz to give a thorough review of the work he's done here in drafting and bringing this ordinance in front of the board.
Okay. Mr. Seitz.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. Some years ago, the California legislature adopted Water Code Sections 1810 and trailing statutes. Those are in your agenda packet. The basic premise of 1810 was to set up standards as to when other agencies and other persons could request, or in other words, in some situations, demand that a water purveyor provide its infrastructure to wield water to another area. The idea behind this statute was to promote water transfers between willing buyers and willing sellers. And this legislation basically came out of the drought years when folks were concerned about it. The idea here is that we have our water infrastructure, and under Water Code Section 1810 and its trailing statutes, it is available to the extent that we have excess capacity to respond to requests to wheel water from one part of the Mesa to another part using our conveyance facilities. Now, there are some limitations related to those requests that are within the statute itself, and that is they can only, he can only use, make a demand to use those conveyance facilities during such times as excess capacity actually exists, that the commingling of the water, in other words, the water to be wheeled through our system, doesn't result in a diminution of the beneficial use of our water that we have in our system. In other words, you can't have waters that don't, that won't coexist in our systems. They have to pay, you have to come up with a fee, and that the conveyance of the facility is made without injuring any legal user of the water and without reasonably affecting fish, wildlife, or other in-stream beneficial uses, and without affecting the overall economy or the environment of the county from which the water is being transferred. As the board and probably the audience realize or remembers, LAFCO recently did a sphere of influence update, and this is probably the seed of enacting this ordinance. When they did our sphere of influence update, they contained various mitigation measures. And one of those, and these are all in the staff report, was that we developed a supplemental supply to the tune of 1,000 acre feet in order to, prior to annexations. Staff, in reviewing this, foresees the possibility that within our areas of annexation, which basically surround the district, we could be put in a position of only being able to annex them after we acquire supplemental water, while it could be feasible for someone to export water from another part of the Mesa through our system into that area of annex, into our area of our sphere of influence, and thereby circumventing the LAFCO requirements of supplemental water from the district's perspective. The staff report recites numerous studies, including the latest CEQA findings made by the county related to the Summit Station regarding the draws on the groundwater basin. We also cite the Papadopoulos report and our own expert report in the Phase 3 trial regarding the underlying condition of our groundwater basin. So what this ordinance attempts to do is to limit the conveyance of water. If somebody comes in and makes a request to use our conveyance systems to transfer water, what this ordinance states is that we will only do so in the event that the water to be conveyed is truly supplemental water and not water that what we call native water to the greater Santa, the Pomo Mesa portion of the greater Santa Maria groundwater basin. And then we refer to certain maps that depict these basins or these sub areas, and these come right out of the Phase 3 trial of the groundwater adjudication. And I think if you look up on the screen there, you're going to see circled in red, to the extent that you can see it, that's the court's determination of the greater Santa Maria groundwater basin.
And the board does have color copies in their package.
And then the next one defines native groundwater. And that's that area right there that you can see in red.
Outline the Mesa sub area.
And what this ordinance, and that's defined as the native water in the draft ordinance that's presented to the board. And what the restriction is as follows. Now I'm reading, if this ordinance is adopted, and by the way, this is a two-reading requirement here, so this is not the time that we would actually be adopting it. We'd be introducing it today if the board does want to move forward with final adoption. But it says the district will only consider applications made pursuant to sections 1810 and C of the California Water Code from persons or other agencies requesting the use of district water conveyance facilities to transfer supplemental water. And that is water that is not native water, which is in which is depicted on the map right there. There is one exemption, as the board realizes. We do have a wielding agreement with the high school. It's currently existing, and that agreement is not to be affected by this ordinance. It's already in existence. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And if I may just interject something I forgot to mention, is that, again, in this meeting and in future meetings, we have a complete copy of the staff report on this item, including attachments at the back of the room for any members of the public that would like to follow along more closely with what we're doing. So that's in that folder there in the back of the room, the accordion file.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Mr. Seitz, any bring it to the board for questions, comments? Added language.
I have some suggested added language, but wouldn't we rather listen to public comment first, and then that might change my language.
Okay. Well, then I will open it to public comment on this item about using district facilities to wheel water. Any public comment? Jerry?
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director for the Home Builders Association, and you always look at me when you ask that. I just want a really quick question. I just want to make sure I understood, John. Native water is only going to be like what runs off and percolates here?
Well, you use the word here.
In the area that you defined, it's the natural recharge?
This is the definition that's used in the ordinance at this time. The Pomo sub area, that's what's depicted on this map right here, means that portion of the Santa Maria groundwater basin as shown on NCSD Exhibit C3 in the Phase 2 trial in the litigation filed in the Superior Court, da 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 da. So that's what that's depicting right there. Native water, as the converse to supplemental water, is defined as means groundwater derived from precipitation falling within the Napomo Mesa area stream, channel infiltration from a tributary runoff or other water that provides natural replenishment to the Napomo sub area. These definitions, by the way, are what I did here is I took them right out of the proposed settlement. That these definitions, as far as I can tell, are not controversial. Within the proposed settlement, so that there'd be continuity between orders out of the court and with this ordinance. And then supplemental water means water created through projects completed after the date of this ordinance, which originated outside of the Napomo Mesa sub-area and augments the native waters of the Napomo Mesa area. So basically, it's water created outside of that sub area.
Okay, any further public comment on this item?
Mr. Nestor, I would just encourage the board to leave enough flexibility in an ordinance like this to capitalize on opportunities that exist outside the district right now. You have to look at it both ways. There could be wells or things that are outside your district now that people, you know, may make an offering to you that might be helpful before district boundaries are expanded or so forth. You may have people in the sphere of influence possibly that have wells that could benefit the district. So I would encourage some flexibility in the disposition of this ordinance that would allow for expansion growth to occur.
I just, Mr. President, I could comment on that real briefly.
Yes, Mr. Seitz.
This, you know, if land is annexed into the district and the water comes from that area of annexation, I think that's Greg's question. this ordinance would not apply, because that would not be water wheeling under this ordinance. That would then, you know, what work this one would be concerned about is if you had, let's say, a water source to the west of the district boundaries, hypothetically, and somebody wanted to develop on the east side, right, and they would come to the district and say, we want to take this native water from the groundwater basin and water a subdivision or a project someplace that is sitting more or less without the capability of developing its own water supply. That's what this ordinance is set to do, is to establish a clear district policy regarding that. So I don't think it would apply to your situation, Greg, or to your hypothetical.
Question about that.
Yes.
It's my understanding from reading this that the real law is that we're asked to, the action of the law is 330-20 under restrictions. This is really a thing that says that we don't have to do what 1810 says.
No. Well, go ahead and finish that up.
Yeah,
sorry, I apologize.
It's the way I read this is, this is, it's conditionally letting us not do 1810 under certain circumstances, and we only have to do 1810 under certain circumstances. But it doesn't say that we can't do other things. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. This is.
It doesn't prohibit us from doing stuff.
This is directly tied at the hip, so to speak, to 1810. What this ordinance attempts to do is, if you take a look at your packet and you go to the actual water code sections, and you'll see section 1810, and if you go down, you're going to see subparagraph D, mm-hmm, down there, which says, and I already recited this in the staff report, but what this ordinance is attempts to do is to say, you can't, section D cannot be met if you are conveying native water.
Okay.
That's how we drafted the ordinance.
Yeah. So it permits doing the thing that Mr. Nestor was worried about. It permits us taking water from outside of the area, but it just doesn't allow us to be compelled to take water from outside the area.
No, I think that, see, that this ordinance is only directed at our conveyance facilities where two private parties want to wield water across our water conveyance facilities. That's the only situation in which two private parties, it could be a local public agency, but it can't, but the district isn't the other public agency that is identified in 1810.
No, we still
have to
Mr. Trotter was first.
Mr. Trotter,
in my judgment, and I've had some experience in this type of thing, the stage is set for a challenge, because what the district is doing, even though it's justified and proper, is circumventing or attempting to circumvent the law.
Well, if I might respond, that was a concern of staff in drafting this ordinance, and that's why we attempted to define our policy position as to subparagraph D in 1810. So we did our best to take 1810D and recite the factual background as to why the transfer of native water through our facilities would have a detrimental environmental impact on the resources. Now, and we also cite in the staff report that this ordinance doesn't provide absolute guarantees on legal interpretation. It clearly states the district's policy and the district's position and articulates the basis for it. Mm-hmm. We did this by ordinance as opposed to resolution, which would have been another way that we could have done this, but we're also partially relying on Government Code Section 61621.5, which is in our enabling statutes, which means it's within the Napomo Community, it's within Community Service District law that a district has the authority to regulate the use of its facilities by ordinance. So we're trying to here attempting to use all of the authority that we can muster to adopt this ordinance.
But it's a variety of action that's challengeable.
Oh, absolutely. From a lawyer's perspective, there's nothing you can do within the state of California that's not subject to challenge. So I mean, that's true. Well, but I would suspect that the challenge would occur if at the time that someone came and wanted to develop, I mean, actually use our facilities.
Yes.
That is what's stated in the staff report, that this is not ironclad. It, you know, the final determination could be in a court of law. So, Mr. Trotter?
But it is proper and justified and real.
Yeah.
So I think it should be done.
Okay. Any further questions or comments, Mr. Trotter?
No.
Okay. Mrs. Wersing, you indicated.
Please. I just want to confirm possibly that I'm in full understanding of this. The way I kind of understand this, say, for instance, the Kanata land, we are not able to maybe come up with a 15% conservation, and say down the road we're not able to accomplish this in LAFCO. So anyway, they go to Cal Cities and they want to wheel the water through our pipes, our facilities to let Kanata, for instance. And well, there's a lot more. I would like to study this a little bit more too, but is this the direction that we're trying to?
Well, it's not specific to any one development, and within.
Well, right. I just used that as a
within
example.
The hypothetical that you gave, it would depend where Cal Cities was achieving that water source to transfer across our facilities. If in your hypothetical, Cal Cities had supplemental water as defined in this statute to wield water, and we had the excess capacity and all the other deals were worked out, this ordinance would not prohibit that transaction. If, on the other hand, under your hypothetical, it was native water that was sought to be transferred across our facilities, this ordinance would prohibit it. So it depends on the water source. And again, I'll just remind the board how this works. I think we stated in our staff report at the bottom, you basically have two choices today. One is you could make minor edits to this and introduce it. If there are concept changes or major edits, it'd be staff's recommendation to give staff what the edits are and then reset the initial hearing at your next meeting.
Okay.
Mr.
Wynn?
Yes, three or four things here quickly. First, I really appreciate what staff's done here. I think this is an important part of managing water source and defending the aquifer. And I do think that in 810 section D, that there are two bases there on which we should be able to defend a refusal to pump native water. One is the first clause, injuring a legal user, which would be our ratepayers. And secondly, without unreasonably affecting the overall environment, certainly the pumping depressions, if that were the source to be wheeled, would also qualify. So I think you've done a good job of covering it. I'm a little... I have a question on attachment C, and then I'll come back to B. Attachment C, the definition for native water, I'm not exactly sure where the water would fit, which of these two, native versus supplemental, the water that would be identified as our recharge water. We recharge the basin at our wastewater treatment plant. That's doesn't seem to be precipitation per se, and it's not stream channel infiltration. I'm not sure that would be called natural replenishment, since we're the ones that are actually injecting it in the ground there. On the other hand, it's not supplemental. Or maybe it is. I'd be curious how that fits the legal definition.
And if I may weigh in this, and then John will clean it up. Our recharge of water out at the Southland plant is that's our return flows, and no other agency could claim those. You know, to be there, to be water that they withdraw from, you know, the basin and wheel. So
I understand.
Okay,
but that still doesn't answer my question. That particular water, if you were either south or west of our facility, on outside the district boundaries, but within our sphere, mm-hmm. you could put down a well, and arguably you could pump water, some of which was that water that had been returned. It's our water, if you will. It's not supplemental, I don't think,
no.
And it's not native either. So do we need to broaden the definition of native water? Do we need to add a third category? I'm not sure. But I think there's a loophole there that needs to be closed. And I'll leave it for you to deal with. I don't have language to suggest.
Let me just say, if I can, native water, and I'm listening, I think you may be on a good point here. The prohibition is on supplemental water. What water is allowed to be transferred is supplemental water. So I think keying in on the definition of supplemental water is what's key.
Mm.
We just put native water in there to show a converse. And maybe the deal here is that we delete the definition of native water. But here's what is allowed, you know. Means water created through projects completed after the date of this ordinance, which originated outside of the Napomo sub-area and augments the native waters of the Napomo sub-area. We use the native waters in conjunction with the definition above, but I think
that's a tighter way to go.
Huh?
I think it's a better ordinance.
What, just to delete the
to delete that
definition of
and
native
only,
water?
And only prohibit
use the term, John, other than native water, which would encompass any water other than groundwater.
Well, what we could do is we could eliminate native water, uh-huh. take a look at eliminating the definition of native water, and then just use the supplemental water means water created through projects completed after the date of this ordinance, which originated outside of the Napomo Mesa and augments the native water of the Napomo Mesa.
Yeah.
And we will sort of fool around with what we could do with the word native water, because I'm not sure that I'd want to include the word native water if it's not defined.
Okay. And then in section B, page 2, this is more in the form of a question to you. When you have a series of five whereases, all of which are quite clear and have a long history with us, did you consider inserting, say, between 4 and 5, a whereas that goes something like this, a non-professional would say, whereas the court has registered concern about pumping depressions on the Mesa leading to a need for concerted management. If we make no reference at all to the court case, the vacuum can be interpreted either way.
We can include that.
And I think maybe saying something about that, so that it's clearly it's the pumping depressions. We're no longer sustaining a claim of overdraft, at least not actively and energetically at the moment. Would that?
No, you know, that. Do I think it's legally required to be in here?
Probably
no,
not.
But do I, if you want to use this as your policy position,
would it be
as
helpful?
A statement of a policy position regarding the adjudication, staff can clearly include that.
In your view, would it be helpful, or is it?
It would be helpful probably from a policy perspective.
Okay.
You know, I can't say that it would be one way or the other as a legal perspective.
Okay.
Because we can certainly enact our ordinances. We don't have to use anyone's interpretation of the Phase 3 ruling as a foundation for adopting our own ordinances.
I just note that since we cite DWR and Papadopoulos and SAIC, that the most common rejoinder that we hear from people who don't agree with the district is to say, well, yes, but the judge trumps all of that. To include language from the court that resonates with those, I think, would at least be helpful.
The question is, though, and what I could do is update the staff report to reflect my interpretation of the court's decision,
okay,
and make reference to the issues on the cones of depression in the findings and the ordinance. Okay. If the board would feel more comfortable with that. I don't have any problems doing any of that.
It's just that normally the language of the resolution lives on in our records, and the staff reports, once you've adopted the resolution, they become documents that are informational.
Actually, what I tried to do here, and I tried to do this with all my ordinances, is if you take a look at the whereas on page 2, it's actually the last whereas based on the staff report, staff presentation, and public comment, those all become part of the administrative record in adopting. It's just that,
okay.
You know, it'd be my hope that, you know, as we store this ordinance or any other ordinance that incorporates the staff report, that the actual staff report would be attached in the same file.
Background information. Then the references to native water under that last whereas number 1 would also be brought in line with your suggestion on attachment C.
Yeah, I would probably define native water, as water pumped from the Santa Maria subbasin.
Regardless of how it got there. So maybe take out the references to precipitation.
Then
to
follow ASA. Yeah, see the subbasin up there.
Right.
That's because that's a trial exhibit, but it's actually the Pomo Mesa subarea.
Okay. Good.
The court specifically refused any notion of subbasins.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, when we have further discussion, it's going to be staff's recommendation that you adopt option B in the staff report, which instruct staff to incorporate Edison the ordinance and chapter 3.30 of the district code and bring the ordinance back to the board at a subsequent meeting.
But before we get that far, Mr. Eby, had some comments.
I have 4 things at least. On your page 1 of attachment B, the first set, the third recital, it says, since current projected pumping beneath Napomo Mesa exceeds inflow, and it says natural recharge, I assume that means from rain, plus subsurface inflow, you didn't mention return flow there.
And there's a reason. Paragraphs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are almost word for word of exactly what's in the Papadopoulos report with inserting anything different, because the Papadopoulos report speaks for itself, but we could add whereas is otherwise. I just don't want to misquote specifically what Mr. Papadopoulos said.
All right, I understand. The second thing is on your Exhibit A, it's not marked Exhibit A anywhere, and I just assume that Attachment C is Exhibit A, but should it be marked?
That's a good point.
And then, again, on your definition of native water, it says water derived from precipitation falling, stream infiltration, but it doesn't mention subsurface inflow, which is a big component. Subsurface inflow from Santa Maria is probably, you know, thousands of acre feet.
Yeah, what we did there, again, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to, the instructions that I'm getting from the board is to delete the reference to native water or just define native water as water pumped from the Napomo Mesa sub-area.
That would be fine. That would be fine. That would solve that problem.
Yeah, so I think that's where the direction that we're taking from the board.
Otherwise, we'll have to come up with a long
right
list of where native water may come from.
And then a similar problem in the following paragraph under supplemental water, it says water which originated outside the Napomo sub-area. Subsurface inflow originates from outside the Napomo sub-area. Originates.
But it wasn't created through a project.
No, but it originated from somewhere else. That's, I just don't want to get caught there.
I'm making a note of that.
And then finally, the only one I really care about is in your third recital, item 3, it says that seawater intrusion is not an imminent threat.
And that's a specific finding within the Papadopoulos.
And I can't support that at all. That whole three, number three, I think is not a fact. There's no evidence that the seawater intrusion is not imminent. It says decades must pass or something like that. Well, decades have passed. We've had a depression since 1985 at least, so there have been two decades that have passed that meet the requirement for that. And then finally, we have inadequate monitoring to know whether there's seawater intrusion yet. We have no offshore wells, which is one of the requirements. The wells that are used for determining seawater intrusion are too far apart to tell if anything's happening in between them, and they're too infrequently monitored to know whether you have a seawater intrusion imminence. So I think that whole paragraph, I wouldn't support this if that whole paragraph, which stated that seawater intrusion is not imminent, is made. Especially if you haven't read this book yet, and I don't think any of us have, Seawater Intrusion by Atkinson. This is a book I'm going to donate to the NCSD as soon as I finish reading it. But unless we're experts in this, which I don't think we are, I don't think we can agree that seawater intrusion is not imminent.
So can you, again, show me, we're on recital 4.
It's on 3. It's on recital 3, item 3.
Yeah, and I think I'm there.
On page 1 of Exhibit B. It's the last paragraph on the page.
At the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
It says seawater intrusion is not an imminent threat. I'm not saying that it is an imminent threat, but I'm saying you can't make the claim that it's not an imminent threat.
And why John gets his feet under this, what I see here is a citing of specific work done by an expert, and we're saying these are the findings that are made in that report.
But this recital essentially agrees with that. It says, whereas it's making a finding of that finding, and saying we agree with that fact that it's not an imminent threat.
Okay.
And I don't agree with that. And I don't think you would lose anything in this document if you just struck 3 completely.
Okay. I think, Mike, can I just bring up an alternative suggestion. I mean, we're going to do what the board wants us to do, so I just want to make sure everybody understands that. I think that there are other studies out there that cite 2020. They sort of have dates associated with them that are out there. In fact, I think the DWR report itself cites 2020 as a horizon. We could take a look at those other studies and see if there are other studies that are out there that have that arrive at a different conclusion than the Papadopoulos report, and take a look at it from that perspective, or we can take a look.
I just don't see any point in making your argument here by including that paragraph.
No, I'm not attempting to create an argument. What I'm trying to do is recite various reports.
Justification.
As justification. The most telling, to me, in my mind, the most telling part of the Papadopoulos report is his finding that is recited at 1. This is the telling one. The groundwater pumping in the Napoleon Mesa area is in excess of dependable yield. Since current and projected pumping beneath the Napoleon Mesa exceeds inflow, natural recharge plus subsurface inflow, the Napoleon Mesa portion of Santa Maria groundwater basin is currently in overdraft, and projections of future demand indicate increasing overdraft. Finding number 2. The DWR's finding that the groundwater beneath the Napoleon Mesa area are consistent with county resource management supply criterion level 3, existing demand equals or exceeds dependable capacity. It seems to me, just on balance, that those two findings are the ones that concern legal staff regarding the groundwater basin.
Let me suggest some language in that paragraph then. In the last...
Please.
Pardon?
Please.
Thank you. In the last sentence, if the word many were taken out before decades, that would certainly be scientifically demonstrable. I think the word many is excessive personally, and I would agree with Ed that to say many decades, you're talking, what, 4 decades, and that would be... Clearly, it can happen a lot sooner. The numbers we're getting say 15 years away, which is 1.5 decades if we do nothing. So if you take that word out, I think we're a little in a bit better shape.
And we'll take a look at that. You know, it's just not my... We'll take a look at it. But I just make one observation, if I might. At this point, I've been working for this district for 15 years, and it's not that great a time to say, you know, 15 years from now is a long period of time, because to me it is a very short period of time. I'm just pointing this out, that I don't see 15 years as we're all going to be here in 15 years. Right. We're not talking
anyway,
assuming that
if we took that word out, I think it would be a little closer to what most studies have shown. And the other thing is, then the sentence before that, if we take out that last clause beginning with associated with and substituted something like this, though there is no evidence now showing that seawater intrusion is an imminent threat. Instead of saying there is no threat, which I think Ed's right. I mean, with monitoring as poor as it is.
Yeah, the one thing that I'm hesitant to recommend to the board is that we change somebody's findings that is in a report.
Oh.
Or allude to our conclusion. We can add another whereas interpreting the Papadopoulos findings, but to go back and attempt, it's like doing the minutes. I mean, what's in the report is in the report, and If we're quoting it word for word, I think we need to be...
Then I would support Ed's suggestion that we delete number three entirely and put the substance of it in a whereas someplace else.
Okay, I had one suggestion on that, and again, that's a paragraph I was having problems with, because many decades, even though that came from a report, the report and its date is not referenced here. How many decades have passed since this study that said many decades was done? I mean, was it 20 years ago?
No, this is Papadopoulos.
30 years? Yeah, but he based his upon something else, which maybe where he pulled that from, that was based upon something else.
What? Right, I think what we'll find as we do a deeper investigation of this is that what Mr. Papadopoulos did is he took a look at the DWR report.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you remember how the Papadopoulos report came into existence, is that most people thought the DWR report's statistical findings, although becoming antiquated because of the continuing march of drafts, that the statistical resources was acceptable. In other words, the actual numbers that they came up with. What the county had trouble with is the interpretation that the DWR applied to the statistical framework that was in the report. And they requested that, there was a staff recommendation not to approve the DWR report, because this is John Seitz interpreting county staff, which is dangerous. But the staff report was clear that they thought that there were significant holes in the interpretation of the data that was accumulated. And Mr. Papadopoulos was instructed to take a look at other reports, but I think primarily you're going to find he focused on the DWR report, not on its conclusions, but replacing his interpretation or his opinions on what the data supported as far as a conclusion. So, this is brought up many times that the Papadopoulos report is not an independent water study, and that is absolutely true. I mean, they didn't go out, as far as I know, drill new holes or do new well levels or anything. I think Mr. Wynn called it a mega study.
Meta.
Thank you. I knew I was close. And that's what it was. It was just an analysis of existing data on it, and he came to the conclusion that the data, and remember, this was supposed to be the idea behind this report was supposed to be neutral. Purposely found somebody that didn't have a stake one way or the other in findings regarding this groundwater basin. And, he came up to a conclusion that the data in the DWR report and other reports supported a severity level 3. And, so I just want to make sure everybody understands my interpretation of the background of that report.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Seitz. Well, we've had public comment and questions, comments from the board, so what is the board's pleasure? We have an option of as is.
Well, I think that John's requesting that he be allowed to do some more work, isn't that right, John?
Yes. I mean, there is significant comment here that we are not going to be able to trap in a concrete statement. I feel comfortable saying this ordinance has been introduced, because once you introduce the ordinance and you go up to your adoption hearing, the only changes that you can make at the adoption hearing are clerical in nature, and not, you can't make substantive changes. So it'd be better to get the wording correct.
So, Mr. Wynn?
Do we have a two-hearing policy?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is a policy. Now, just to highlight this,
Because we've done lots and lots, not once.
We've done one ordinance without a second hearing, and that was the adoption of your
bylaws?
Water allocation ordinance. And as part of that, we made some findings regarding the water allocation year, compliance with the RMS, and a variety of things, and you suspended that policy for adopting that ordinance. Having said that, and this is just a highlight, the California legislature is going through committees to rewrite community service district law, and clearly one of the new rewrites is that we go to the two meeting requirement. And the issue there is in 1955, when they adopted the community service district law, they didn't include any provisions for adopting ordinances. So the common interpretation was either you follow the county model or you don't have a model. This district, long since, by the way, prior to when I came on board, had previously adopted the county model.
I think then we need a motion to instruct staff to take another look at this, incorporate comments and suggestions that were made.
I move Mr. that to, we instruct staff to incorporate edits into the ordinance in Chapter 3.30 of the District Code and bring it back at a subsequent meeting.
I'll second.
Do we have a second? We have a motion by Mr. Wynn, a second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary, call for the vote.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes.
President Ryan?
Yes. And my question to staff is, do you feel comfortable or do you feel you have adequate input from the board regarding these changes?
I feel comfortable. I would just caution there's probably going to be a little more discussion on the Papadopoulos report, but we'll try and phrase it in such a way that we'll give you options that you say cross this one out, include this one, do this, do that, so that we can hopefully come up at the conclusion with the precise language.
Okay, item number E2 is for the formation of ad hoc committees. We have in Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. At the board's regular meeting of February 23rd, we heard a presentation by applicants for annexation to the district. And at that time, your honorable board took the course of action to agree on a formation of ad hoc committees to review annexation applications. And now the ad hoc committee was not appointed at that date, and so we brought back to the board at this meeting to appoint an ad hoc committee for that specific annexation application. And since that time, staff has become aware of an outstanding application for annexation that I've included in your packet today, and that's for the Melscow property, which is in an area adjacent to the Crystal Oaks or Kanata Ranch application, which is what we'd heard at the last meeting. And with that in mind, staff is asking the ad hoc, we either appoint one committee to work with both these applicants or to appoint separate committees possibly. Knowing that we have a number of potential annexations coming in the future, that the ad hoc committee I think what's best here is instead of saying for annexations, we have to ad hoc committees need a specific charge. And I think what would make sense is since both these annexations are adjacent to each other, that maybe one committee could handle and work with both applicants. Again, the idea here is to work with the applicants, understanding that we've got
basically competing interests. The district would like to know as much about these projects, these proposed projects, as possible prior to making a commitment for service. And then the other side of that is the applicant's interest in getting a commitment as early as possible in their project development from the district so that they know what they can, so that they've got a known entity as far as water service, water and potentially sewer service. With that said, in addition, of course, the district has a number of policies and some benchmarks that we have to meet before we can, before we're allowed by LAFCO to annex. So it's staff's recommendation today that we appoint an ad hoc committee to interface with the applicants on the Kanata or Crystal Oaks application, and either, and it'd be the board, you know, based on discussion and direction of the board, either that same ad hoc committee to work with specifically again the annexation of the Melscow property, or that would be a separate ad hoc committee, that would be the board's, whatever the board's desire is on that. So
before I'd like to open this up for public comment regarding the formation, or we actually have formed an ad hoc committee, but nobody on it yet for Crystal Oaks and possibly the Melscow property, which is, I think that's Nipomo Oaks is what it was called at one time.
I think you're right.
Any public comment on?
I just have a question. My name is Katie Fairbanks.
Would you wait till you get into the microphone there and then
okay. My name is Katie Fairbanks.
Good morning.
Is it still the policy when they do annexations that that they have to bring the water with them? Is that still the service district's policy or is it not? That's my question.
Good. I'll let Mr. Seitz answer that.
Well, first of all, I don't know, this board is changed so many times, but Katie was an original board member when I first became employed here at the district, so she has a significant background. There is two possibilities now. One is that they bring their own water, or B is that the district has sufficient supplemental water to supply it. It's changed a little. The district is actively at this point acquiring supplemental. We have an MOU with the city of Santa Maria to import supplemental water, and to the extent that we have excess supplemental water as a result of that agreement, it can be used for annexations. On the other hand, there's nothing to preclude areas of annexation to work with the district to acquire additional supplemental water in the same project. So it's pretty flexible the way it's set up right now.
But they bring water.
The policy is clear. Supplemental water is required.
And
okay.
Just to bring your attention, I brought the sphere of influence map of Area 1 up just so the directors can see that. And again, the Kanata Ranch, and now called Crystal Oaks, and I believe Melscow, which one of these is one of these 40-acre parcels. And again, Mrs. Melscow indicated to me that through the process of working with the ad hoc committee and working with her, we're up here, aren't we?
No,
it's one of those 40.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Actually, it's not one. It's all 202 acres. They're recombined again in their GPA application.
The application, I want to be clear, that is in your packet from Mrs. Donna Melscow is a 40-acre application. And what she indicated to me was she'd like to work. She likes the idea of working with the ad hoc committee, working with the staff here, working with the neighbors, both in this parcel and potentially in this area, to come together with you know, possibly combining these applications for annexation, if that works out, or to at least work here to say, you know, there's an opportunity to bring this entire 200 acre, am I counting that right, 200 acre parcel in for a single annexation request. So to work out that type of details through committee is just what we're looking at today.
Okay. Mr. Seitz, I didn't bring my bylaws, but I believe it's the president's prerogative to appoint members to ad hoc committee. I believe I read that someplace there, like 212.
I have my copy with me, so
thank you. Yeah, that's what it says. Ad hoc committees, the board president shall appoint such ad hoc committees as may be deemed necessary or advisable by himself, herself, and or the board. The duties of the ad hoc committee shall be outlined at the time of appointment, and the committee shall be considered dissolved when the final report has been made to the board. So under these ad hoc committees, it would be my understanding, and the way it should work is that once they report back to the board with a recommendation or on a full application, when the application is complete, the ad hoc committee would automatically be dissolved at that time. Mm-hmm.
It would seem logical to combine the two.
Well, it would seem logical to me for at least this that's before us. And as Mr. LeBrun pointed out, the application we have from Don at this time is just for the 40 acres, and I assume it's the one right off of Hetrick where the standpipe is. So I know there's some, well, we will get into that. It's my prerogative then to appoint directors to serve on this. Anybody who's still in their seat upright is available for appointment.
comment, Larry. Comment.
Mr. Eby.
Didn't you say that part of forming this committee is giving them a specific charge as to what their mission is?
Yes.
Okay, so it seems to me that we've already voted that we're going to have a committee previously. So it's the only thing that we're going to do today is describe the mission, vote on what the mission of the committee is, and then you appoint the people, right? Is that all?
That's part of it. We can discuss what we expect of that committee at this point in time, what their marching orders will be, so to speak. Let's do that. Mr. Wynn.
Looking at the map, it would seem to me that there would be three broad areas. One would be to look at the Crystal Oaks project and interface with the developer and the advisory council about how that water demand and sewer demand and issues within our purview might be met. The second area would be Melskow, and as you said, she only has 42 acres there against Hetrick. Whether we're to process an application for there, or whether I'm told that all the others have come in now with their general plan amendment, which is still existent, mm-hmm. whether they want to come forth or not, I think that's a whole second issue. But I know they don't want any. They don't want a lot of design up front. It should be fairly superficial what they're asking. But then third, it seems to me that the area between those two along Cherokee. Unless that's to be a non-CSD barrier between the two, if the other two are going to come in, which is a big, big if, I think it would be sensible to bring them in at the same time, at least to explore that question with the residents. And
explore
it. I think that would be a third, conceivably a third.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to rock the boat anymore.
Okay.
I promise.
Judith, do you have any thoughts, suggestions on what the marching order should be for this ad hoc committee?
You appointed an ad hoc committee.
I think that would the three mentioned by Mr. Wynn sounds like a good beginning.
Mr. Eby?
Well, I don't have any problem with what the areas are that they talk about. I just think that this committee should be limited to discussing with the applicants the content and the completeness that their application should have. What I've noticed in one of these applications is that Donna Melskow wants water, but you have no idea from the application what it is, how it's going to be used, whether it's residential, commercial, you know, and we have different rules for supplying water to residential and commercial. And I think that the other thing is that we need to know, have a good handle on how much water these people are going to need and what happens once we annex them and all of a sudden their need doubles or triples. We still have to supply it. So I think we need some boundaries around how much water we're going to supply them and what we do if they exceed that amount of water in the future. Since this is coming out of our supplemental water allocation, they could foreseeably break the bank. So I think there should be some safeguards in there to make sure that whatever water they originally are expected to use, if they exceed that amount of water by a certain amount, then there should be some safeguards in there as to how we can replenish our own supply. Mm-hmm. But short of that, finding out how much water they're going to be using and safeguards in the future water use of those, I think that pretty much ought to be the limitation of the committee. I noticed that the NCAC has formed a committee to deal with the Canada application, and they want to include an NCSD member on that. I'll talk about that later because I don't think we ought to be on their committee. I think we ought to be on our committee just to let the applicants know what the NCSD needs to know for in their application. Because as I said, these applications indicate the fact that they want water, but we need to know more about it to make sure that we can reliably supply those in the future and still supply the rest of our customers. I think that ought to be the limitation of what the committee does.
Larry?
Yes. Mr. Trotter.
All the things that Ed just said are appropriate and proper.
Mm-hmm. These are all
they're part far of beyond the purview of an ad hoc committee. That type of thing comes to the board at a later time when this thing is surrounded and all the policies and the concepts are assembled.
But on the other side of the coin, they need to keep these things in mind when working with the applicant about putting boundaries on resource.
The reason I mention this, we don't want to give the ad hoc committee too much authority here because it's a board function.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I have.
Well, we don't have, the committee has no real authority. They can't enter into any decision for the board.
You recall I said that in some respects you're circumventing the authority of the manager even the creation of an ad hoc committee. but I've agreed to step aside on that.
Okay, well, have some.
I just want to make one clarification. Everybody understands this. The ad hoc committee makes recommendations to the board. They have no, in fact, that's really clear in CSD law. It's only the board that can bind the board. So they would be coming back with a recommendation to the board as to the completeness of the application, what needs to be done, but clearly the board would make the ultimate determination.
Okay. I also want to chime in to just a little bit here. I think we don't need marching orders that are too specific. They need to be somewhat broad in scope, and Mr. Wynn's three points are excellent. And I have to agree with Mr. Eby in sitting on the NCAC for quite a few years that what was presented before us is this is what it's going to look like, and what was built
after it went through the county, it was like night and day sometimes. So with that in mind, I would like to ask Mr. Wynn if he would like to chair this ad hoc committee for these two annexations.
I'd be happy to, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Wynn. Do I see a hand for another member to work with Mr. Wynn?
I would like Mr. Eby, if he's available.
She raised my hand?
Yeah, I did.
I'll do it.
Mr. Eby, would you
to. Sure.
Also join with Mr. Wynn?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
But I'd, so, I'd also like to make a motion as to the mission of the committee. This is the time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I move that the mission of this committee be to work with the applicants of the properties. I'm not going to restrict it to these two. Applicants of the properties north of the district, adjacent to the freeway, to to develop the parameters that their application needs to have to be a complete application for annexation to the NCSD. I think that's what I wanted to say.
I would second it, except the people along Cherokee are not applicants currently, but I think we should be talking to them.
Well, since this is going to be an ad hoc committee and going to dissolve, you don't know what those other, when those other people are going to come in.
But we might say, I don't know, but we might end up saying we don't want, say, the Melscow annexation to come in until the others come in at the same time. I mean, that in the past, in fact, we were approached by the first property there on the Cherokee and Pomeroy, what, 3 years ago for annexation? And we said, no, not at this time. We didn't want a single parcel. We wanted it to come in as an entire area. So I still think that, where you're going.
What are you saying, that you want to change the definition of the area that I talked about?
Let's have the area. Let's take the word applicant out.
Okay.
Can I ask a question that impinges on this? I'd like to ask Mr. Nestor, excuse me, Greg, have you had conversations with the Melscows regarding working together in some respect?
Not on this specific project.
They are separate. Okay. But there's no talk of working together on it.
Mr. Seitz, may I, just for clarity and from the staff's perspective, could the motion be for the ad hoc committee to work with staff and the proponents of annexations in area number one regarding their request for annexations and help assist in developing an application that these two board members could support and bring it back to the board for approval?
That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
You want to say west of Hendrick?
No, I'm just, that's area number one. If there's somebody else in area number one that...
west of Hendrick.
No.
We would decide would apply to anybody in that area.
It would clearly include the Melscows and the Crystal Oaks area of annexation. But the idea here is that you're going to work with staff, work with the applicant, come back with something that hopefully the ad hoc committee can recommend to the board at the end of the trail.
Yeah, the purpose of any committee is to save the board from doing the work in session.
Right.
It's to spend the 2 or 3 hours outside of session, so we don't have to do it here. And it's the purpose of the committee also is to come up with something that they believe that the board will pass. So it can't be just two people's idea. It's got to be something that they think everybody else can agree with.
If Mr. Eby will adopt that language,
that's,
I will second
that's
it.
That's my motion, yes.
Okay. Mrs. Worthing.
I just wanted to ask, where is Pomeroy? Is the Kamanaka property in this?
No.
No,
it's way out.
No.
That's right, there's Pomeroy.
Oh, there it is.
No. Pomeroy is out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kamanaka's a little red-shaped thing there.
That's Pomeroy, so I believe...
Yeah. Is that Kamanaka there? Right there. Yep. You got it. Okay, well, we have a motion and a second for so-called the scope of the committee's efforts, jurisdiction, work. Do we need a roll call vote on that? Then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Okay, thank you. Item E3, another probably long one.
Could you take a...
Be nice to take a break now. It's right exactly 10:30 in 9 seconds. Let's take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back no later than 10:45. Thank you for bringing these. I'm going to put that to bed. I'm going to go to the Old Town Bible Association. Open it, and I'm going to fold it and redline it and give it to Mike.
Yeah. And give it to him.
These
are the going to read it and give it to the NCSC.
Because it's just created too much of it. There's too much.
Rightfully confused because it's a...
There's more effort being spent in wondering than in just getting it down. And if they can't remember... Okay, well, we're all here, so let's come back into session. And item number E3 is the SLO County Resource Management System regarding the severity level for the Napomo Mesa. And Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. I'll turn this over pretty quickly here also to the District Council, Mr. Seitz. Just want to make the board aware of a recent change. We were looking at being back in front of the, or this item for the Board of Supervisors. We're going to take up the reconsideration of their level of severity finding at upcoming March 22nd meeting, and we have now received word from the county that that item's been pulled off the March 22nd agenda, and we're not entirely certain as to when it may be rescheduled.
Why? Can you tell you anything about it?
We do not know why. However, we have had contact, President Verheilig has, from Supervisor Asajian, and he has rescheduled a meeting, I believe, we're not sure of the invited participants, but we believe it's probably stakeholders on both sides of the issue for a meeting up at his offices on the 30th of March,
yeah.
To further discuss this item.
11 a.m., and I understand that Jerry Bunin has been barred from attending, so I had to get that out, Jerry.
Well, in light of that, I'll let John take it from here and give us some direction as to how that changes, and then we'll have some open discussion.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. What you have in your packet is a staff report, and the letter that is in your staff report is actually a letter that was written to Mr. Han as identifying the district's position early on in the process. I don't believe that even when we sent this letter that the staff report for the county on this issue had been completed. Additionally, I should advise the board that was also staff's intent to have a separate letter in reply to the staff report if we thought it would be necessary. With this item being moved off calendar for the Board of Supervisors, as staff's belief that we'd be happy to answer questions and staff and public comment, but that we'd probably bring this back to the board again after we have met with Mr. Asajjan as identified and prior to the hearing, because what the information that's contained in here may well be updated, you know, as a result of ongoing discussions. And so with that in mind, rather than reciting through what's in the letters and all this, I'd be happy to answer questions and take public comment. But then at the end of the day, it would be staff's recommendation to continue this to a subsequent agenda or to table it until such time as this comes back up on the Board of Supervisors' agenda.
I had a conversation with
I'll open it to the board for comments and Mr. Trotter.
I had a conversation with a supervisor last week regarding some station and how it relates to this issue. And he appeared to be totally unaware of the facts. It was disturbing to me.
Mr. President, if I might just respond.
Yes, Mr.
This is just my observation, so it's take it for what it's worth. The Board of Supervisors has two new board members. So, and most of the action that took place, the RMS-3 and the summit station issue, was presented to the Board of Supervisors under a different board. I'm not saying it's materially different. It was just different board members. So if I don't know who you talked to, but if it was Jim Patterson or
Jerry Lenthal.
It could very clearly be that they just weren't aware of what the prior board did, or if they were aware of it, they were only aware of it as a...
Well, not only what the prior board did, but the facts related to this issue.
Right, and that's one of... what we see as one of our objectives in all of this process now with the two new board members is to write correspondence in such a way that we're attempting to do two things. One is, of course, advance the district's position regarding these issues, but number two is, from the district's perspective, bring the board back up to speed. So most of our correspondence is a little longer than probably staff would like it to be, but we feel it's imperative that that if a new board member sees this, they at least get an inkling of what our perspective is.
Okay. Any further comments or
just
questions?
Just my appreciation for staff in not sort of going along with the conventional notion here a month or so back that since this was going to be taken care of, we didn't need to litigate.
Okay. At this point, then, I'd like to open this up to public comment for the RMS system. Mr. Bunin.
Jerry Bunin, Home Builders Association. I was going to actually say some of this the last time I was here, but you were running late. And you asked for public comment, and you really indicated that you didn't really want any, and you looked right at me, so I didn't give you any. I talked to the county staff, and I think that the issue at the moment is they're not entirely sure what they're going to recommend. I think it's, no pun intended, it's a fluid situation, and that the requirements that go along with level 3 may not be what everybody wants on the table, anybody. So I think that's kind of what's out there. They're looking at some time in April. We're also meeting with them. I will be there on March 30th.
I assume, Jerry, with that comment that we'll be invited to all the meetings that you guys have too?
No, you're invited to all the stakeholders that Cacho calls. Do you invite me to all your meetings with the supervisors?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Not sure where to go next. A couple of things I wanted to talk to you about on level three and the water. I really hope, and I think you are, that you're looking at more than 3,000 acre feet from Santa Maria. I've spoken with them, and while it's not all totally available, there are 10,000 acre feet that are at play in their amount of water that they have that could be part of the solution or part of the situation of what you eventually negotiate. I've heard you guys discuss how you plan to use and allocate that 3,000 acre feet. And I really feel that you really, really need to look at not simply serving what's just inside your boundary at the moment, but what's in your sphere of influence. I believe that was the deal that left you, that's where you're going. Well, you're nodded. But I'm just concerned that in the discussions I've heard here, that you're talking about what's in the urban area and not what's in the sphere of influence. And I've spoken with LAFCO, and I don't think that's what their interpretation of what they did was. That they expected you guys to go out and get supplemental water that would also serve the sphere of influence. Plus the fact, and I know that there's side issues that go with this that Mike reminds me every time I bring this up, but the world isn't going to end when you get to the end of the general plan. It's going to continue. You're going to have more growth. People are going to go have babies. People are going to go move into the county unless there's something coming down the road that I don't know about, in which case I got some things I want to get done quickly. So I'm hoping you're looking at more than 3,000 acre feet, because if you don't, and the land in the sphere of influence that's not inside your urban area, they're going to be able to drill their own well, form their own mutual water company, tap the very groundwater basin that I think that's your goal of trying to protect. So the better long-term planning solution is to actually go get the water that's available. I heard John talking to Mrs. Fairbanks. I was sitting in the audience when I was a reporter at the time, when Napomo rejected state water twice. And we wouldn't be having this conversation if that had been a different discussion. So there's a situation where the water's available. Eventually you're going to need it, and I'm encouraging you to make sure you go get it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I've got a question.
Did you have, okay, we have some. Are there any questions for Mr. Bunin from the board?
Yes. You said something about there's 10,000 acre feet of water available from Santa Maria. Can you give us evidence of this?
Available might be slight wrong terminology if I use that. They have 10,000 acre feet that they are not currently planning to use. That doesn't mean that they might not change their policy. But yeah, I talk to their staff a lot.
But my question is, have you seen any indication that they're willing to sell this to somebody else?
Well, I didn't get into negotiating with them, if that's what you're asking, but I called the staff that's involved with the utility district and knowledgeable staff, and I said, well, what is the total? How much is out there if NCSD wanted to come and negotiate with you? And they said it's 10,000 acre feet. Okay, but they said that's clearly a policy decision with the board, with their city council. Somebody would have to go to the city council and go, you know, we've been negotiating over 3,000, but we might like to negotiate over a larger amount. And 10,000 acre feet is a lot of water. That's going to be a lot of growth for them, and I know Mike tells me that we'll have desal by then, and we could bet on that one, but we'll see. So I'm not certain that it's, I would tell you that I'm not trying to convey to you that there are 10,000 acre feet available, but there's certainly room to negotiate for a lot more than 3,000 acre feet. Which, from what I've heard you folks discuss, you're planning to do that mostly in groundwater recharge and to fill inside a lot of your urban area. And I'm just encouraging that we look at the long-term big picture. Do you need me to stay up here or there, Mr. Sainz?
No, I was hoping that you would sit down before I started. Well, so I didn't give you a chance to respond.
Don't public servants have to be polite to the public?
He's not a public servant.
But you pay him.
He's not a public servant. The problem is, I actually know Jerry, so respect would be. By the way, I do have respect for Jerry.
Any more public comment on this issue, Mr. Nestor?
Greg Nestor, I'd like to comment to Mr. Eby's question and just throw a little bit of what I've heard. I tried to ask the same question. How much available water is tangible from the four pipes that stub out towards the north, 2 12s and 1 10-inch? And the comment that was made was that they're willing to sell as much water as can pass through those pipes and not affect the northern hydraulics of the city's public works area right there. So Cannon and Associates had asked the firm that's from Los Angeles, I believe, that has the hydraulic model for the city of Santa Maria to give them information based on that. Basically, it boiled down to, in my nutshell understanding, they would send as much water as they could through there to not affect their local hydraulics right there, but it would probably result in a constant volume. It couldn't be a fluctuating volume. So the system on this end would probably have to have tanks to store it during off-peak hours and then draw from there and work in a balancing flux that way. But that was the all that I've heard to date, and I know Cannon has pursued that outfit a number of times, but it's not a priority to them. If NCSD asked, maybe they would have a little more punch behind it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. Mr. Sykes?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple comments, at least from what I think I'm speaking for Michael and myself and other staff members here. One is the basin is what the basin is. You know, and our position is pretty much in line with what Mr. Papadopoulos opined, and it has been that way for a long time. Development is therefore, we believe, should be restrained. And we're specifically talking about general plan amendments and those types of things. Water availability should not, I mean, from one perspective, should you sit back and say, well, water's not available, so we get to keep on pumping? You know, because we don't have supplemental water, we should, in one sense, not be required from the development community to take supplemental water as a condition of development. You know, because the water's not available, we can't take it, therefore we should be able to pump from the groundwater basin. I mean, that's understandable. I'm not necessarily criticizing it. On the other hand, you have the community service district over here as one of purveyors on here that is taking a very proactive position on it and is actively exploring supplemental water. I agree that a pragmatic approach, and I think that's what Greg is basically saying, I think that's what I heard, you know, is what is needed. A pragmatic approach, though, requires the cooperation of all the governmental agencies and to a certain extent the development community to achieve that. You can't come to the district and say, you should take more water, because it's our ratepayers that pay for the water until it is sold. So the economic fluctuation and the burden of all these things are extraordinary from this board's position and probably from our residents' position. The idea of, from Michael, if I get too far off, you just slap me around here, is, you know, that's why this RMS3 is important from the district's perspective, because it does create a pragmatic environment in which to acquire the supplemental water with certainty that there is indeed a market for it. And from the district's perspective, the more supplemental, from an environmental perspective, the more supplemental water that's brought up onto the mesa, whether it be development, the district, or whatever, only says one thing, is the return flows are going to return to the basin and are going to have a positive effect on the long-term integrity of the basin. So I agree in respects with the development community is that I think they're willing to pay for supplemental water. It seems to me, though, that in order to have that pragmatic approach where, A, the water is available, development's going to develop, there's going to be a market for it, and all flows together in a reasonably predictable manner, it's never going to be perfect, is that we need to make sure that we have the cooperation of the county, that the, you know, Cal Cities, Rural Water Company, and all that into a single mix and a single frame of mind as to what the fix is. And if we're sitting back, from at least my perspective, with governmental agencies having different perspectives as to what the groundwater basin is and what can be developed out of it, that is going to drive the development community to those agencies that have a perspective on the Mesa that is probably different from what Mr. Papadopoulos required. So I think we need as a pragmatic approach. I mean, that's what our desire, staff's desire is to all of this. We just can't have different governmental agencies, especially the county out there, with a different view or a different perspective on the Mesa, because it's going to drive the development in that area, because they will clearly be able to pump water cheaper from the groundwater basin than assisting in the payment of supplemental water. And that's just the way I see it. I think it's the way Michael sees it. And so we're hoping that through this RMS3 that we can get that pragmatic approach, or at least get the framework, you know, to facilitate the pragmatic approach to it. I mean, Greg wants dependability. I think Jerry wants dependability. He wants to know that it's there. We want to know if we're actively involved, that we got a market for it, you know, because we're just one little water agency in the bigger mix.
And just to add on to that I think that's our biggest concern. Is right now we've heard a number of suggestions, and I've had discussions with various directors about, is 3,000 acre feet enough water? The district still stands alone in its project to seek the 3,000 acre feet. And I can think of a number of scenarios where we acquire 3,000, or if we, and our CEQA consultant cautions us on you know, going after more water than is necessary, because that encourages growth, so we've got a balance there. But really this idea that the district goes out and negotiates, enters into contracts and commitments to deliver a quantity of water, and either for whatever number of reasons, the development community then either doesn't do the development, you know, the economy can change drastically on us, these things can change, or again, they have a cheaper route to get water, because we don't, and that's where we get into this RMS discussion, where they might say, well, you know, you've got supplemental water, but you guys are talking $1,000 per connection, expensive water, these types of things. We can pump. We can pump, make a mutual, and have senior rights over the district anyway, so we don't need you. So it's, and then here we are with a commitment to the city of Santa Maria to purchase quite a bit more water than we might need, and no partners. So the district's got some balancing to do right now, and that's just
where we're at. Yeah, I have to agree, we are walking a fine line at this time. There's too many uncertainties or unknowns or gray areas out there. With regards to this, though, staff's recommendation of appointing an ad hoc committee and task the committee with meeting with each county supervisor individually, I would assume this could be tabled until at least after the March 30 meeting with Cacho, and based on the results of that, revisited.
That's
yes.
My only recommendation would be not for, I agree with you, Mr. Chair, that we should table the ad hoc committee. Mm-hmm. I would encourage staff, though, to begin having talks with other supervisors. It's important that they talk to Cacho, but it takes three votes to pass anything. Mm-hmm. Two of them are neophytes. They both seem to be sympathetic to our concerns here. Mr. Linthal came down and listened and participated in a discussion at Danette. Mm-hmm. Adobe. Mm-hmm. Mr. Patterson has spoken quite openly about his support. So I think it's important that they at least approach those two in an informational sense, and possibly the chairperson, who will, in fact, agendize this at some time. I would hate to see all the ball played in one court and it just stopped.
Well, would that be staff, or should it be a board member?
Well, yourself, to with staff, possibly. I mean, I'm not...
meet with them.
I just mean, I think it's important that we broaden the dialogue, that we don't keep it just with one person.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a consideration that should be done, even if we, regardless of the outcome of the March 30 meeting, could be done.
I will be talking. I'm not suggesting that I should do this, by the way. That's not. I hope I'm not understood that way. I will be talking to each of the supervisors about the Water Resource Advisory Committee, who has the responsibility for the RMS, mm-hmm. And some other things. And I'll be talking in that vein. But I would like to see this board represented to them as well, wearing a different hat. Mm-hmm.
Okay, do we need a motion to table this? I believe we have one.
Comment.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that I agree with Cliff that a lot of people don't understand what a level three means. I brought this before the NCAC last week, last meeting, and explained to them the best that I could what it meant. And They voted to recommend a level three to the county, so the NCAC now has an input. But the thing that surprised me was that that there were people who only knew on the NCAC board that were new members were the ones that voted against doing this. And I haven't talked to them yet to find out why they voted against it, but the only thing I can figure out is they didn't understand what it meant.
Well, I think, excuse me. My observation has been that they see the impact of level three, can't wash cars, you can't do various other things. It's that basic, I think.
I think you could be right. The thing I've noticed talking to people about this is they jump from acknowledging the scientific fact that there is a level three, they jump to the impact of the mitigation. They assume that if you say there's a level three, that there will be a certain mitigation. And they vote against it because they fear the mitigation. And what I'm saying is first you acknowledge that you have a level three, just that fact. Then you worry about how to do the mitigation. And so many people jump to the conclusion that the mitigation is moratorium, the death word. And they vote against it, against the scientific fact that there is a level three condition, because they're worried about what the solution will be to that. And I think that's the thing that people have to be educated on, is it doesn't have to be the death word is the mitigation. It could be other things. You know, supplemental water is one of them. So I don't know how to get that across to people, but I've been trying.
Okay, I would like to hear what you have to say on this. So if with boards...
I might suggest a little more.
Can you state your
name? Yeah, my name's Tim Murphy. I live at the Summit Station area. I would suggest a little more formality in your meetings regarding a public comment period, that you make it clear, you open it properly, but when you go to close, you ask for more comment, and then you announce you're closing the public hearing session. So I know in the first item on the agenda that wasn't done, so I was never clear when the public comment sessions actually ended. So I just think it needs to be very clear when that's done, and then you can proceed with more board discussion.
Okay.
But, I'm basically here to oppose the staff's recommendation of supporting going to the county recommending a level three water level severity. As you did in the water conveyance issue, it came up earlier, you cited certain portions of the Papadopoulos report and ignored other portions of it that discuss the fact that there are conflicting studies as to what the overdraft situation is on the Mesa, and that's not a fact, as it was just previously stated a few minutes ago, that we are an overdraft on the Mesa. And also, there something Mr. Wynn brought up earlier, there's no mention then and hasn't been now regarding the lawsuit that's been going on for 6 or 7 or 8 years, and the finding of that lawsuit regarding overdraft and including what's going on the Mesa here. So I feel that everything I understand that that is apparently the board's position, the service district position, and you're building your case. But I also feel that if you're going to do a report, you need to recognize all the evidence out there, all the studies that have been cited, and other evidence, and coming up to your conclusion, going to the board and making recommendations when they go to the county. I would kind of like to know, I don't know if I get an answer to this question or not, is the purpose of the lawsuit against Summit Station, because you're opposed to the EIR, I mean, this, I'm not trying to bring that up, I'll tie it together. I'm not bringing that in as a separate issue. Is the purpose of that you're opposed to the EIR, or are you attempting to use that as leverage to get level 3 water severity when the county reviews that issue? Again, coming up here, I guess it's been portfolio when that issue comes forward. Is that simply done as leverage, or is there a true issue with the EIR? And in that regard, in that same issue, I'd kind of like some clarification. Mr. Wynn stated at the beginning of this session, and I think he's talking to staff, he stated, we thought this was taken care of and didn't need to litigate. And I want to know what that comment specifically meant. Thank you.
Mr. Sykes, we're not going to be responding to litigation questions in open session. So that's number one. And number two is what we alleged in our complaint is why we filed the lawsuit.
And then number three?
No.
Mr. President, I think it needs to be stated again, simply because it's been misstated here in public comment. We have not sued, and we do not intend to sue Summit Station. There is no lawsuit against Summit Station.
I took it to mean that the lawsuit against the county. Well, it's rather misleading.
Right. We're not. I mean, I'll see if I can explain it this way. The district takes no pleasure in filing lawsuits against anyone. And you can double that against filing lawsuits that have a material effect on its residents. I mean, we don't take these things lightly. So, but again, the lawsuit, the allegations and the complaint speak for themselves, and they're a public record.
Okay, with that said, I'd like to move on to item number E4. District planning retreat.
If the board wants to have a motion to table, that's fine.
I'll make a motion.
Have a motion to table item number E3.
I move we table item E3 until we get a new estimated date for the county to take this up.
Second.
Board of Supervisors.
We have a motion by Mr. Eby, a second by Mrs. Worsing. Madam Secretary, you can call for vote, please.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Bailey?
Yes.
President Kyle?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Secretary. Moving on to item number E4, our district planning retreat. That was discussed, well, was brought up some time back about maybe having a retreat to discuss board goals, visions for the future of the district.
I think
it's now on the agenda.
Okay.
So I'll open it up for comments and questions from the board.
I think it's an excellent idea. However, is the agenda for this retreat is critical. So in some time in advance so the board members can consider it. Secondly, and I don't know, is any location been established for this?
No, it's all wide open at this point in time.
And my second observation is, as a participant in many of these, is you get away from the common environment, normal environment, when people can concentrate and know what their mission is. That you know, maybe you can show up for 2 hours today. You go somewhere close by, minimize the costs, and have an agenda and some
moderator,
possible facilitator.
John will permit some socializing connected with this.
I got a question. I have a question. Brown Act?
Yeah.
Did we just address
it's that? Still under the Brown Act.
I knew this question was come up. These, of course, are open public meetings. That law was changed about 10 or 11 years ago. I mean, it was clarified. I don't know if it changed, but it was clarified that these types of meetings are open and public. And so that brings in two things. One, there has to be an agenda. It has to be published. And secondly, that the meeting, short of some type of emergency, not emergency, some overriding circumstance, the meeting has to be held within the jurisdiction of the district. Well, those are the two.
Is that a new rule?
Well, it is. It's not really. It comes up this way. It's not a new rule. There was an interpretation of the Brown Act back in the late 80s and early 90s that planning retreats were not meetings. It was a controversial interpretation at best, even back in those days. But it has long since been clarified that planning meetings or retreats are public meetings.
What about within the jurisdiction? I think maybe that's what
no, you mean. Within the jurisdiction, well, that came along with it too. But if a retreat wasn't a meeting, then it didn't have to be held within the jurisdiction. I mean, that's just the way it was set up.
If it is a meeting, it can be held beyond your jurisdiction?
The answer to that question is yes, but it's under very limited circumstances, and having a retreat, I don't think, is one of them. I mean, people know this community a lot better than I do, but the idea of not having this boardroom is fine. I mean, there's other places within the district boundary that are capable of holding a meeting. So the idea of changing the environment, I think, is a good idea. I mean, I'm not saying that my opinion matters. It's just that the meeting location would have to be in some place within the district, absent, and here's the critical finding, I don't think we'll ever meet this, if there isn't adequate facilities within the district to conduct the meeting, then the Brown Act provides that you can hold the meeting in a different facility that is closest to the district boundary. And you're never going to get there with this meeting room being available.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment, if you'll sort of bear with me, Mr. Wynn, that since it is a public meeting, you can't have it in a place that would make it that would make it a hardship for your constituents to attend, and therefore it you know if we said, well, we're going to move it to Barbados, you know, boy, that's a nice spot. But our constituents may be unable to attend, and therefore you can't do that. So it's got to be somewhere, at least if we have the facilities within the district boundaries. Mr. Wing.
The REC, which is also a Brown Act organization, organized a tour. Mr. Trotter made most of the arrangements for us. We went to Bakersfield, Arvin, and such. But the county had then to lay on transportation so that members of the public, fully noticed, were allowed to join us if they chose to. And a number did, by the way, and went along and ate the meals with us and made the tours and such. So that was outside the county even.
Sure.
So I'm not sure that we couldn't go someplace else so long as the public was invited to join us and we provided transportation.
No.
But see, now I don't know. Maybe you'll...
I haven't seen county council's memo, if a memo was ever prepared, but there's a clear distinction. In that one, you are going to a place to see something specific that was in your interest, and I believe that what you did is you turned a different water operation to bring back information. And again, you can see that the county went out of its way to make sure there was public access to it. This is actually conducting a meeting of the board. Now, there's two things that are generally unique to study sessions. One is it's very rare that the board takes action at a study session. You may have items that are listed on there. The role of the public is a little, I don't want to say it's different, it's a little different in that because there is no action to be discussed or items to be taken, public comment becomes a, is not, you can do it two ways. It can be kind of an open flow, round table, you know, go back and forth. But generally when I've seen these things take place is that there is a public comment period at the beginning of the meeting and then a public comment period at the end of the meeting, and then the policy discussions are taken in between those two areas. So so that the board has an opportunity to truly converse amongst itself as to what its perceptions are. The goals are generally brought back at a subsequent meeting for formal board adoption if that's where the board wants to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the modern interpretation of how these things work.
Okay. Well, you know, with that said, what I would like to is, well, I have several items. One is a facilitator, moderator, whatever you want to call them. Does the board feel that having one would benefit our Does the board feel we should even have a vision retreat?
Well, I'm in favor of us working together cordially, and I think so. This could be helpful. This is just me personally. What I would not find at all interesting is I would not want to bring in a facilitator that's ignorant of our issues simply because they're good at helping people talk to each other. That's one. Secondly, I don't want us to schedule this until we have an agenda. I want to know what we're going to meet for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe we could send in comments to the president as to topics we'd like to see raised. I mean, there's different ways that could be formed. But to schedule a meeting when we don't know what it's for, to me, is not particularly appealing.
No, we should not do it at this time.
And third, and I hope I'm not reading too much into this, but I have attended any number of meetings that were designed to improve team dynamics, and you had people who were in a very patronizing way telling you to get along like adults instead of children, and I never liked the insult implied, and I didn't like their dynamic. So maybe I'm a bad team player, but in my view, we're not to be a good team. In my view, we're to each one of us speak for our community as clearly as we know how, and that's more important than getting along. I mean, but as a case in point, Mrs. Wiersing and I often disagree, but she brings critical issues to the table when she does, and for her to squelch her views or for me to squelch our views just so we play nice in public, I don't think is helpful.
Well, I would hope that wouldn't be the, I mean,
but I don't know what was intended here. That's why I'm saying an agenda is, for me, at least, is pretty important.
Yeah, we do need to develop an agenda.
How did the concept get on the board agenda? Who created this? You did.
I thought about it.
In your working life, did you participate in these things?
Yeah.
Is that what prompted this?
We do it yearly for Napolo Native Garden. Okay. We did it yearly for Ford Aerospace.
Okay. Now, and I did also. This is in tune with what Mike just said. I don't see any strife here. The way this board has functioned, at least since I've been on it, has been excellent, except for one major, in my judgment, major defect, which we no longer encumbered with. And I think that We function very well. I don't see a real deep need for this.
Well, my thought for this was that it's not a session on how to get along with each other. it's a session of where does each of us see the district needing to go? What is our vision? Do we have a vision that we got district boundaries and they no longer change? Or do we have a vision that the world's the limit or someplace in between? You know, what do we feel the district needs to undertake in the way of projects in the coming future? And I think developing that vision will tend to give some direction also to staff.
Can't we do that within the parameters that we function in right now?
We can do it, but I think if we are all looking at somewhat of an overall picture, it makes it a little easier for each person, as well as new members coming onto the board, to, you know, they can either buy into it or they can say, you know, at our next whatever, if there is a vision retreat, we can change. But at least it's like having a roadmap of where we want to go.
We can create that now with the format we have, I think.
Okay. Mr. Seitz, you have a comment?
Just, I'm going to comment from just my experience. I've done that, have been involved in many of these. First of all, I think hiring a facilitator, if we're going to move forward, is hiring a facilitator is something that the board should really consider. The facilitator, in setting the agenda and prior to having the meeting, actually converses with each board member. And that's their goal, is to sit down with their board member, each board member, so that they know what individual board members want to see. So it's not so that they have that background that Michael was talking about before they actually conduct the meeting. Usually there's one or two meetings that the facilitator will meet with the board and staff, by the way, just not the board and staff. The other thing is what I have seen as being the outcome of these meetings is generally like a five-year plan. These are the goal, you know, this is where we want to be in 5 years or 4 years, or you can pick the horizon. But that's the idea behind it, and what it does in one sense, and we do this, as Cliff has said, sort of without this, but what it does is it gives the board direction. Why is this item on the agenda? It's staff report consistent with goal number 7 as you know, da-da-da-da-da, staff is bringing forward, blah, 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 whatever it is. And so it gives direction to staff how to lay it out and what the board expects to accomplish. And it also, the board knows what it expects to accomplish, so if there's some direction. I have not been involved in a facilitator where where it's a sociology, psychological training ground. And I agree with Michael, to me it would just be unproductive. Sometimes they do center, though, on issues like how do you communicate with your residents about your goals? You know, so there's some type of, and that may be about as psychological as it gets, is how, you know, if you have these goals, what's the communication triangle? How do you get that message, and what's the best way to get that message and get feedback, by the way, from your residents, you know, how to deal with the press, you know, so that can be part of the common understanding of the boards too. But that's what I see coming out of these things. It's more, like I say.
Yeah, I sort of have to go along with what you said, and you know, once there is a goal established, then it's much easier to see the steps necessary to achieve that. And it's not, I often feel what's happening in the South County development wise I see as a piecemeal kind of a thing. There's no plan that says 3 years from now Napomo Village East and West commercial development will be starting. It's things just come one at a time. What I didn't want is to be like we're in the middle of a forest, we're looking at a bunch of trees, but we've lost sight of the overall picture. And, you know, for the, that's the, my reasoning behind having this retreat or meeting or whatever you want to call it. Fist fight. Mr. LeBret.
Just to provide some input, and I, on President Verheilich's suggestion, of course, I added this item, and I gave a call up to Bill Van Orden up in Templeton again, a bit of a mentor to me. And he's used this technique with his board. Now, his boards, many of them have been in their positions for a decade and over now. But he said early on, they had quite a bit of changeover, new board members, these types of things, and they used a facilitated planning meeting. And he actually gave me a recommendation of a father and son team out of Santa Barbara. I believe it's ROCH, R-O-Q, or R-A-U-C-H.
Raucous. That's what he wants.
Raucous. But in any event, I did. I haven't contacted those folks directly yet. I was waiting to hear poor direction on that. But as Mr. Seitz outlined, Mr. Van Orden reiterated also that they come in, they meet with each board member individually, the staff, management level staff that would also be involved in the meeting. And then without having an in-depth understanding of really these complex water issues and things that the board has, their expertise, again, is helping folks see commonality in view and bringing together, again, a vision that is shared by the board and gives that roadmap to the future. So he was... very positive about the experience that Templeton had with a facilitated or moderated
Did they have it in their own facility?
No, they did it off-site of their facility, but I believe they used a local restaurant that had a meeting room, but you know, nothing. And I've been involved with these, actually in my previous employment with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and again, I felt they were useful. I know from the management standpoint, it really helped our managers understand the important issues to the board, provided a bit more of a candid forum. However, again, it's a public meeting. I remember clearly our agenda stated there will be no action taken, so that we made that statement up front to put people's minds at ease. I don't know if that's something we can do. I think that takes suggestions from the board on this, but I think there are locations within our community that could work well for this meeting. So that's all. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to say maybe one thing.
Yes, Judith.
I'm not sure that it would be helpful because our main problem is planning and building departments, since we don't seem to have anything that we can do to even control the vision of our own community here. You know, they're building mishmash everywhere, so I'm not sure that would be any benefit, maybe even cause more frustration. But because my main thing is out of control growth, and we will be eventually becoming, which is already a global water problem, and I think out of control development is our main problem here in the Bone. So I don't know what our retreat would do, except to.
I have a suggestion. I've been, throughout my working life, I've been a victim of many retreats, and we call them off-sites, and we usually went off-site to do a specific thing and brought recommendations back to somebody, and they were never acted upon. So
that being the case, I'm generally negative on it. And we had the usual hired facilitators and so forth, and they were real slick and professional, but like I say, nothing ever happened. In this case, I think what we need first is a specific agenda as to the items that we would talk about. Once we had that, I think we would get a better feel as to whether it would be valuable or not. But not knowing what the agenda is right now, I kind of feel like it's not clear that there would be any value. But if you could come up, or if somebody could come up with a list of things that we would retreat about and try to solve some problems, I'd be for it. But until I saw an agenda, I don't mind being a victim. I have lots of time on my hands right now, but as long as there's lunch, I'll show up.
Most of the facilitators, as was said here, have a shrink's background.
I know. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to look into your inner self. They're going to look at your palm.
I know. I've been a victim before.
Well, it's if. I guess there's two ways to approach the agenda process. We can either do it in-house, or we can, and this costs dollars, to hire somebody to put a preliminary or a tentative agenda together, which involves interviewing the board members on a one-on-one basis, as well as staff, and coming up with that. Mr. Wynn.
What if we tried combining the two this way? What if we took the first run at it in-house? Mm-hmm. I've got four issues with subcategories just written down quickly while we've been talking. Others may have other topics. We throw those together. We circulate the combination around. And if the board feels that this could be pursued further, then we go with that to what Mr. Seitz suggested, and there probably is something to be said for somebody sitting down with us one at a time and talking, and with staff as well, and then seeing if it's useful. On the other hand, if our preliminary collection of topics doesn't seem to be very useful, then we save ourselves the expense of hiring somebody.
Mm-hmm. If this fellow opens a book of ink blots, I will walk out of the room.
So the place I would draw the line is where they stand you up and ask you to fall back into somebody's arms behind you to show that you trust them.
Trust. No.
All I can say is that we're held it.
I can say I've been a victim before.
I don't know what kind of off-sites you went to, but boy, I never attended any of those.
And if I may add, Mrs. Weirsein brings up, I think one of you know your concerns and issues is that we've got this seems like runaway building going on in the community, and the board feels fairly empowered to do anything about it.
We that's not our charge.
I know it's not our charge. I know that well, but I think a discussion that we could further explore, ways that we can increase our influence. How does our annexation policy help us or hinder us in those, these types of discussions? And that might just be a nice open forum issue in itself. And that's one of the ones I wrote down right here. What can we do about that to feel more empowered and more at the table or in control on these issues?
Here is an issue, building planning. We have Zippo control over that. Now, part of the discussion to be, but how can we mitigate having no control? How can we somehow influence it?
How can we gain some control?
And hopefully gain some credible input or, not control, but we can credibly influence it such that it's more to the community's liking, favor, whatever. I rather like Mike's idea that we all have our favorite issues that face the board at this time, not just the board, but face what we are forced to do sometimes. In other words, here's another development we got to provide water to. and sewer. If all the board members could jot these down and bring them to our, do we want to go for next board meeting or the meeting in April, the first meeting in April?
State again what you want. State again what you want.
Goals and objectives that for NCSD.
Specific district. Agenda items.
Yeah, specific agenda items.
Let's hear what these agenda items are. And
yeah. Items that you would like to see discussed, put up as a goal, resolve, so on. Planning happening for, so on and so forth. When do you feel comfortable?
I could have mine in 2 weeks easily. I mean, I don't think I'd come up with more if I waited another month. It's okay. One of those things, you just write them down.
So let's shoot for March 23rd meeting. That is our workshop.
But we're just going to collect these.
We're just going to collect them and collate them, and here's what the board came up with. So it'll be minimal time spent on it. Minimal time.
So we get this information to you, and then you
Bring it to the board meeting, and we'll put it together.
If I don't know what staff timing is like, but if we got it to the general manager with a week, just like a week from today, and then you could, some of us are going to say the same things, you could put those together, and maybe they'd be in the packet. And then we could just vote yes or no, do we go ahead or not?
And it would be nice to know how many said the same thing. Mm. You know, three responded, development.
Just one more, having just gone through this with a city client, they came up with this list, okay, and then they signed, then they came up with a grid next to the list, and every director got to put, or city councilman got to put a 1, 2, 3, or 4 in that grid.
Priority.
And then they added them up, and then they prioritized them so that everybody could see, once that list was there, what the priority, you know, not that the priority wasn't controversial, but, you know, that people didn't talk about how could this be a priority when this one came up low, but made the agenda clearer as to issues.
Well, that may be something you'd want to put then on your items would be high, medium, low priority kind of a thing.
If I can chime in on this, this can work. I'm concerned the agenda, our next agenda is intentionally quite brief. I thought I'd keep it to our standing items, and then we'll be going right into our rate workshop. The other issue at hand is the general manager is not going to be available next week. And so that would make it difficult for me to obviously to pull this information and get it in the agenda to you. However, I could if it was something as simple as each director is going to be sending me via an email what their desired items for the agenda are, and in your ranked order, your order of preference, or if you threw 1, 2, 3, if we stayed with 1, 2, 3, then I could upon return and prior to that 23rd meeting compile that. That wouldn't be a big effort.
Next week is too soon.
Okay. So then we can go to that. April 13th is then our next agenda, I believe.
That's what I'm thinking, right? Because you are going to wait.
Well, but I think the effort that's on my part is, you know, just to compile and put in a table and basically then present the results of this survey. And of course, we're talking about a 5-member survey. So, but the 13th, that's fine. That April relaxes 13th. It and gives the directors a bit more time.
Can I just make one quick suggestion? I think that the list should be developed and then prioritized. In other words, rather than having each director do it, you know, put down the 5 or 6 whatever items you are, you know, I mean, staff would, I'd recommend they do it alphabetically, so that would be, you know, neutral, and then have the board go through, take that home as a ballot, and mark in there which ones they see as priority members. That way, it'd be easier for Mike to end up with a priority than whether interpreting.
Right, and given a bit more time, it gives us time to do that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that, because then we're looking at the total list, and we may not have thought of some items that we feel, boy, this ought to be at the top of the list.
Right.
I just didn't think of it or something. So. Okay, April 13th, just, you know, bring the stuff or get it to Michael a week prior or something, just so he can...
Right, so I need to have inputs. I'd really appreciate those. That let me give a date and see if that would work. As you know, April 13th meeting, agenda mails on April 8th or is delivered. Agenda is finaled on the 4th, of course. Now, it's on the agenda, so if I had them by the 6th of April, that would give me time to compile the list and put it into an agenda item on the between the 6th and the 7th, and then that would you'd get it back in writing in your hands on the 8th for discussion then on the 13th. So again, that's April 6th.
Yeah. I hope that's the last one. Okay. I'm running out of space for notes.
Okay. Okay, with that said, move on to item F, which is manager's report. You have that in your packet. All heard that the fire flow passed, so Mr. LeBrun.
I've got a few adds to what we have in the packet. I'll just review it briefly. I did attach an updated summary of the service request. However, I don't believe there have been any changes since the last I presented that to you. I do have some on the horizon. I think I indicated that at the last board meeting. I expect to have some final applications. Regardless, I will do a mid-year, and that's water year, so that's why this it's not mid-year of anything else we're used to thinking of, review of our allocations on April 13th, and that's in accordance with the ordinance where we talk about doing a mid-year review. So it'll be a separate item we can discuss. We can look at that in particular. Rainfall totals, again, has our February on there now. You can see we're most aligned, I believe, with Santa Maria. And then I include the Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo locations here. We continue to get the short end of the stick a bit. Those folks both being over 30 inches at their stations. We're a tick under 15. However, for that station location, I think our area in general, that we're at about 100% of a rainfall year at this point. And we'd expect to see some more rainfall between the remainder of this month and possibly April. So positive, a very positive report.
Well, Mike, next year, why don't you put Napomo on this?
This comes right off a National Weather Service website that doesn't have Napomo and
the rain gauge. But put your own number in there.
Right, I could. I work with CDF has a water gauge.
Yeah.
And then. Okay.
Tribune publishes Napomo. I don't know where they read it, but it's pretty...
Those are weather volunteers.
Well, it's pretty close to... I've got a little gauge in my backyard, and I don't keep the total, but whenever a particular storm or day happens and I read mine, it matches theirs very closely, so they must be near me, whoever it is.
Yeah, I don't know what they do, but I think CDF is right over here someplace.
Yeah, north of. I can't imagine a water district not having a water gauge, a rain gauge. I can't imagine.
They can't afford the staff to man it, I guess.
There's a CMS gauge going in this fall on the Mesa at the Woodlands. It's already paid for. It's going to be installed. They just have to get the turf down so that they get a valid reading.
And then that'll be automated input that I'll be able to access at any time, and we can add it. But we'll, point taken, I'll add some local source here. But what I'm,
you know, the thing about rain totals and everything is it's really a generalized number, and that's what we have here in front of us.
It's like last night when we were driving home. We were in deep fog in Grover Beach, and the closer we got to Pomeroy on our street, fog was gone. But then it came in later, so the rain, precipitation is different also.
Yeah, it tends to vary. I mean, I've had it rain like heck at our place, and by the time I get to Napomo Native Garden, you know, it's almost blue sky.
Can continue on with just a brief, I'll try to give a brief overview on the manager's report. On an update on our wastewater out at Southland Wastewater Plant, I note here in the staff report, we made a change to the aerators. We've gone to full surface aeration in our primary ponds. We saw an excellent response with the dissolved oxygen levels. And now as of, I had results back from the lab last week's sampling, and our biochemical oxygen demand has decreased significantly, 36 milligrams per liter, and that is well below our reporting limit. And so we're seeing the type of response we expected, and I'm happy to report that today.
That's good.
Excuse me, your safety program mentioned launching the boat.
Yes.
Can one assume it will not be vintage champagne that's broken on its bow?
Well, it's tradition we must follow, but no, we won't be breaking any champagne because we don't want any glass anywhere near our liners. And but we do look forward to doing that. I said, let's go get a sledge survey 2 months ago, and then we said, okay, well, we've got a number of steps and things, hoops we've got to jump through, and we are pursuing that.
One of them is you've got to get out in the middle of the pond in order to take it.
Can't you wait out there?
We're looking for volunteers all the time.
No, Jed.
You understand the specific gravity of that liquid is different than the customary water, and it launches differently. You've got to keep that in mind.
Right. Appreciate it. I don't want to get into specific gravity, but in a highly aerated pond, sometimes you don't have near the buoyancy that you might in another condition.
You can sink.
That's what you have to be careful of, and I'm glad Mr. Trotter brought that up. I mean, one of our standard operating procedures then during the sledge judge, it would come into play anyway, but we'll shut aeration off while we're heading out of the pond. And then it also lets the pond settle, and we make sure we get a good judgment, and we make sure that we've got all the buoyancy that we can expect for the SS Napomo out there. Positive reports coming from our newly installed and calibrated flow meters. It looks like we're operating at approximately 65% capacity. We need a little bit more time on those meters to be firm on that, but that still puts us in a planning stage for a Southland plant expansion next year. We begin planning for our next expansion, especially with the development, commercial development in particular.
Is there quite a bit of open land remaining down there?
We do have a good chunk of open land, depending on what we do with our facility also. We depend quite a bit now on our infiltration basins and the size of those basins. They were oversized, but with all the rain we're having, I'm glad they're oversized. We're right at the limit, but we do have a good chunk of land and open space on our borders there. At the Black Lake plant, I was out speaking to what I came to find out was the annual meeting for the Black Lake Homeowners Association. Quite a well-attended meeting. It was nice. But that went well. Had a number of questions about the salts violations at the plant, and I believe I delivered a clear message on that regard. And then, like I say, a number of questions. My time was kind of running out, and the gentleman who was directing the meeting said, "Well, time for one more question." And I says, "Wait." I said, "I need to throw another issue on the table here, folks. Before we, it was all about salts. They'd stop me in my spiel." And I said, "We're doing a rate study. And I'm here to tell you that we are looking at rate increases pretty much across the board, single digit." Just put that initial word out there. Made sure they were what they were interested in, and directed to our website for, you know, information on the previous workshops, and that our next, and gave them the date schedule on our next workshop, and of course that led to about another 20 minutes of questions, and finally I could see a few out in the audience, you know, giving me this. Forgot to reschedule the landscape maintenance. We've got them on a Thursday to avoid a conflict with our meetings. But
did you say you told them there were going to be a single digit increase?
That's what most of our increases are.
But not for Black Lake.
Not Black Lake Sewer, not Black Lake Commercial, but
Black Lake, as I remember, was 15% to 25%.
Okay.
I hope you let them
know. That's right. Let me interrupt for a second. Mike did an excellent job there, considering the atmosphere, bunch of old fogies.
He answered
the questions very well. And I got four phone calls that night commending me, which is poorly placed commendment. It should have gone to Mike. He did an excellent job, and the board should know that.
I had one very interesting, well, the one, and I think she was sitting next to you. Yeah. There was one lady who asked, you know, given all the rain this year.
That was John Eppert, by the way.
Why are we talking about, you know, why there's no water problem? And, but it was perfect, because then I was able to explain these issues with our basin and the fact that.
I stood up to introduce Mike, turned around, and he wasn't there. He was headed to his car. And I thought to myself, my God, we scared this kid to death.
So I came into the meeting, and I was a bit taken back. I had to park quite a ways away. There was golf carts and cars everywhere. And once I got up to the meeting, and I had my satchel in hand, and the meeting was commencing, I'm like, where are my notes? Where are my speaking notes? And I thought, okay, do I run for it? And initially I was second on the agenda to Mr. Rossi. And so I ran for the car, literally ran for the car. There they were, notes were on the floorboard. Grabbed those, was heading back, and I saw a cliff at the door. You're on! Rossi didn't show on time, so they bumped me up. And anyway, enough of that. It was.
And the comment was made that his presentation was far better than Rossi's.
Well, there you have it.
Great.
At least on the Rossi scale, I scored. So. But anyway, and there wasn't enough time, more questions than we could answer. I assured the community I'd be back out to speak any time they'd like us, and also outlining the rate adoption procedure, and assured them that we would entertain a meeting in the evening or afternoons, or whenever that community would like to see us out there on the particular issues on rates. For the Black Lake Division,
we're looking for a person to represent Black Lake, like Eppert did and like Morrow did, both of whom have declined to do it again. In fact, I even spoke to Morrow this morning, anticipating this conversation, and he said he couldn't do it. So we got to find somebody. I told him at the meeting, I said, my heart is with Black Lake, but I am elected at large. And I cannot be as aggressive as I might otherwise.
Moving down my manager's report then, and the water underwater, I have Lynn Road fire flow test. We've heard that. We had an excellent result out there. The staff report.
Could we back up a moment?
Sure.
To the Black Lake
yes.
treatment plant. I'm just wondering, what is this liner made out of besides platinum? To have a price range of something, I mean, what kind of a liner are we talking about?
To be clear, that now that the engineer's estimate at this point, the range of estimate, $97,000 to $157,000, the variation in that range is due to liner material. The entire amount is not for liner material. That's a subset of this estimate. And a brunt of the project is. Removing sludge, removing the existing liner, reshaping the basin. There's quite a bit of construction that goes along with this. And then you have, these liners must be installed and welded. The plastic must be welded, or one of the products calls for a liner that's actually applied in place there.
Right.
That's the more expensive version. The standard is typically a 40 mil high density polyethylene HDPE that is field welded, and again, those welders have to be certified to weld. No, they're hot. They're actually the weld method.
Well, I mean, when you use the fabric, that's solvent welded. The other one is blown on.
There's one blown on, and then the high density polyethylenes. Once we're the 40 mil size and larger, those are actually welded. Those are field welded with a hot shoe welding machine. It's a very interesting process. One I saw many times repeated at landfills that have been using these products for years to line landfills.
It isn't just glue.
It's not a glue.
They actually melt and it refuses.
It refuses. It becomes stronger than the material itself. Destructive testing and other construction quality assurance goes on in the process. It's very
difficulty in getting rid of biosolids.
No, we don't see any other than just the physical constraints the site gives. We'll have to have a drive-through for vehicles, and it's very likely we'll have to pump a semi-liquid sludge. There's not a drying basin at the Black Lake facility. No opportunity to acquire a drying basin. So that changed the bid a bit. We saw the bid go up.
So you pump it into
the estimate, I mean to say,
tanks and drive it away.
That's our thought right now. Is that we'll leave it up to those who bid on the project to define. But we do have drying beds out at our Southland facility that we'd make available for the contractor if they requested that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. This is just for one of the ponds, right?
That's correct.
And that it could conceivably eat up most of the reserve.
Replacement fund.
Yeah, for the replacement fund.
Okay.
So what happens when the other ponds start to go south real quick? Where do we get the
money? This is the oldest liner, and we're not seeing
1985.
Right. We've got a fairly new liner out there that looks fine.
Right.
And then a liner that's middle-aged.
Middle-aged.
And is showing some signs of becoming brittle. But what's driven it? I mean, we have got reeds growing through this liner. This is the pond that you see when you go by. It's the middle pond.
Yeah.
Cattails and reeds. I mean.
Right.
The liner is clearly compromised. And again, this is, and I didn't mention directly to the Black Lake customers, but these ponds are straight up gradient from Black Lake wells 3 and 4, the groundwater supply wells. So we don't want a short circuit at our ponds. And so the project's needed. I think you bring up a good point. What about a replacement fund now for Black Lake? And
yeah, because generally the replacement fund is funded by capacity fees. Is that not correct?
No, that's not correct.
Then I guess
no.
I'll withdraw my question.
No, it's not capacity fees. Replacement funds are by current customers to basically make up for the amount of wear on the system, so we don't pass on a system that needs it.
Has
a huge financial burden.
I was thinking of another fund similar than
the
capacity fees go into. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I have a question, please. The septic tanks, you know, the septic trucks that go around and pump, where do they dump?
The septic pumpers, the only location throughout San Luis Obispo County and this area in general that allows, that takes septage is the City of Santa Maria wastewater treatment plant out on Black Road. Mm-hmm. And then that water is treated there at the plant. I think they've got about a 7 million gallon per day flow. That may, you know, it's probably gone up since they're growing so quickly out there. Their water's treated and recharged the groundwater basin out there. So that's the only place that's accepting septage the last time I was involved. But,
I was just curious.
Yeah, they used to, of course. There were a number of spreading locations, including adjacent to our plant out there at Southland. That's not done any longer. There were a few out in Los Osos. That was pretty interesting. I thought they'd pump septage and run just a quarter mile east of town. There was quite a spreading right adjacent to the, there's a cemetery out there. And it was right adjacent to the cemetery. I went out and saw that once as a regional board staff. This doesn't make a lot of sense. We need to stop this practice. So, anyway, Hermrick Well, if I may. I think we talked about the Lynn Road fire flow. The big issue there was that the reason the original flow test failed is because the contractor didn't have all their valves open. We asked, they assured us they're open. You can see we went and did a valve lineup on 130 valves up in Summit Station. And then our staff said, well, let's just step over the line into their new system here and check. And a 40-turn valve was open four turns. Okay, let's schedule a new test. Because it made no sense that it had failed. So anyway, yeah. we've affirmed some engineering calculations there, and the pump, the flow test went well. Hermrick Well, I was actually on the phone with Mr. Dave Majora of Majora Brothers yesterday and this morning. He expects to have a test pump. They're going to attempt to move it into the site this weekend, get that pump set up on Monday. And if all goes well, we'll be flowing the well on Tuesday. And I assured him I'd have a number of questions from my board on this because of that huge warrant that we paid there. Any event, that was for work performed to date, and we have some remaining work on that contract, some work they perform. Hermrick, the old Hermrick Well, has been abandoned. So test pumping and clean up a site, and we'll be wrapping up that Hermrick project, at least with the drilling company. The Santa Maria pipeline, I expect during the week of March 7th, I expect when I get out of the meeting this afternoon, I should have three copies of the draft report. I'll circulate those to Director Eby and President Verheilig. Copies of that, and then I had discussion with the Cannon Associates that we would have comments back to them probably upon my return. I expect to sit down with again the subcommittee in this matter. We'll gather our comments and take direction from there. But he said as soon as he gets the comments back, depending on the nature of the comments, he expects a week, 2 weeks, he'll get right on it, finalize this report.
I understand that I would have no conversations with these gentlemen on that, but I would like to have a copy of the report, too.
Okay.
Do we have a PDF?
I don't have it in my hand yet. Yeah, we had talked about him bringing hard copy and
at this stage.
PDF's fine.
Yeah, the only thing that I would caution you on
is
clearly mark the document draft and not the public comment. If you're going to send it out even to your board members, Los Osos got a circulated draft seawater intrusion study. Before you knew it, it became the final deal. It was just a draft and it got out.
They made the mistake of discussing in the public meeting.
Yeah,
right?
So that's what we have to.
So
that's why that draft report won't come into the meeting today. Okay.
Drafts are drafts. Drafts, by the way, are just not public records.
Let's see if I have anything else. Staff is still looking for make, model, and color of trash can to be ordered. I know I've conferred with the directors on this, and Ms. Kathy Kubiak of the NCAC group stopped by and was not able to give us that information. I assure this board, and you can assure those that you have contact with, that given that information, I will order trash cans and have those trash cans placed in locations that are ready for them. That would be where benches are currently.
And I was told in a public meeting at 12 noon on Friday that had been delivered to you that morning. I was assured earnestly that had been delivered, and I said, it's news to me.
Right. And the reference, in fact, there was a reference to a catalog that Ms. Kubiak did not have in her possession and said it was out of that catalog. And we said, where's that catalog? We don't have that catalog. I said, well,
the catalogs.
Well, great. And really what staff needs here is clear, defined direction. We do not want to get ourselves in the middle of
we ordered the
debate
wrong
in the Old Town. So yeah. That's right.
So I will get clear direction from Old Town tomorrow at their meeting.
Finally,
are
as I...
Are these same benches will be put on the west side also?
I'm sorry?
Are these same receptacles going to be put on the west side also?
That's what staff's directed to do. I asked for make, model, color, and where the receptacles are to be placed. And not just, you know, we have a bench, and in specifics, we need to know specifically there's a bench and what's been approved as far as where's that can go relationship to the bench, or in cases where there's not a bench, where that can is to go. There is some county permitting issues there. We're happy to work with whatever representative of the Old Town Committee or whatever committee's handling this.
Yeah,
to provide the...
there's two different kinds of situations. Yeah. One in which we have an encroachment permit from the county to put it on the sidewalk. There's a number of those where the sidewalk's quite wide. And then there are others where the Old Town Association is, in fact, laying down a concrete slab with an encroachment permit adjoining the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And our cans would need to fasten down to that.
And and we'd like to see that concrete pad, when it's laid down, incorporate the fact that there'll be a trash can. I've looked at a few of the sites where there are benches right now, and the pad is simply just big enough for the bench. In those cases, if we're going to have to come in and you know, now we've got concrete work to do, and it's so if there's a contact on that committee, it might be at the staff level or someone that I could work with that could I'd be happy to hear that. Final item again, I just want to reiterate that I am taking a week off next week. In my absence, of course, Mrs. Bognuto will be the acting general manager. We've got the agenda for the 23rd of March. It's set. If there are items that need to be added, we'll look to work through Ms. Bognuto on that and give her as much heads up, you know, ahead of time as possible. That agenda will be final, of course, a week from yesterday.
And then,
my cell phone number is 805-305-1885. You feel free to call it. Leave me a message. It won't be working.
What's your range?
What's your range? What's my cell range? Well, the phone will be at home, and that's where it will be ringing, and I won't be at home, so.
Well, that's why I asked.
Yeah. I'll be leaving that.
Don't take it with you, Michael.
Are you ready for a comment about this?
Sure, comments.
You need a title on this thing. You know, I'm a title freak.
You discovered that. Oh, that's fun. You know, I put this together and fretted long and hard on how I was going to, how we're going to phase years out and interlink this database and everything, and we've had so little action. I think what happens is you get perception. There is community perception that there is a allocation moratorium, that we are not going to give water. And so people call and say, well, what if we need it? How are we going to get? I says, well, give me an application. Come to the board. We can work this. We've got an you know, there's an allocation ordinance, but it has allocation in it. Oh, in fact, that was Ms. Fairbanks' concern, was that she didn't think she could get an allocation. But point well taken. So there need to be improvements on this, and this will, you know, this will come into play. I expect us to do a phasing of an allocation here in the near future. We've got a couple that are coming. Any other questions?
I think this one at 941 Camino Caballo.
Right.
Where is that? Do you know? Because I walked by there and I don't see a house with that address. Is it a lot or?
I don't know physically where that is.
Maybe they know in the office. I can ask in there.
Oh yeah, we can pull up. You know, we have all the APN maps and we can go by APN because. A lot of times there's nothing there yet. And you saw, I was going to bring your attention, I did, let's see if I can scan over here. There's one that we revoked. Oh, there it is.
That's the one.
Okay.
What does that mean?
We vote, they're check bounced.
Oh!
And
I,
so,
thought they ran out of money.
No, they're check bounced, and actually, you know, they had a will, you know, they had a will, we had to send a, we sent a letter to the county and made it quite clear that that had been revoked. We haven't heard back. On the waiting list, we've completed the waiting list. There was one gentleman who put an application in, made an attempt to apply under that waiting list a couple times, Mr. Hernandez, and I had a conversation with him at the desk a number of times as to the inadequacy of his application, and gave him a date that we discussed, and I followed that up with a memo as to he'd need to be back in by this date to still be on the waiting list. He didn't make that date. The waiting list is closed, so any new applications come in, they're on this allocation system. Mm.
Okay, any questions of General Manager? If not?
I do have one.
Yes.
Our last board meeting, Mr. Nestor was telling us about how he had approached the city of Santa Maria for to get supplemental water on his own. And he mentioned that if he had been able to do that, that there was a that Napomo would not be allowed to have any big box stores. Do you recall that? That he mentioned that?
I didn't hear
restricted him if he had done that.
That rings a bell. I remember something about no big box stores.
Well, so I was just curious.
I mentioned that, and it has been part of the conversations that we held with them. It's never been codified in the MOU.
Oh, well, that's my question. Is there any information in the MOU that says anything like that?
No,
that I can't recall it.
No,
so.
No.
And I did not hear Mr. Nestor raise that issue. I was actually a bit concerned that there might be that type of caveat underlying our MOU, and that Mr. Nestor was not aware, might not be aware that water coming from Santa Maria, and I would fully expect that water coming from Santa Maria will come with restrictions. Santa Maria would love to see us develop into a nice bedroom community because they know that our shoppers aren't going up to Los Osos Valley Road. They're going down to Santa Maria. And so
exactly.
Then they don't want to see competition for some of that retail, commercial retail that they're approving. I could see that writing on the wall, but I am not privy to any conversation with Santa Maria staff or otherwise.
And I can tell you, when I went to their city council meeting when they approved the MOU, mm-hmm. and they said in a public meeting, because a former member of their council, who's Mr. Adams, he's a farming family over in Orchid.
George Adams.
Asked specifically, well, how come you're giving it to Napomo instead of Orchid? And they let him know in very certain terms that Orchid poses a commercial threat to the interests, the business interests of Santa Maria, and we don't. So, I mean, they didn't comment on our MOU, but it's out there, trust me.
Yeah.
And by the way, for a lot of us, that's a good thing, too.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
I thought it was okay.
We didn't want big box stores anyway.
Exactly.
Well, that's okay. One of the problems with shopping in Napomo. People are such, go north or south, and that's why the businesses here have such a hard time.
Okay.
That was my director's
committee thought. Reports? Anything on that? Director's comments. I think we started with Mr. Wynn last time.
Started down there. That's okay.
Oh, we started down there? Because Mr. Trotter left early last time, so we started with you. He left at 11 o'clock, so I'm going to start with Mr. Trotter. Mrs. Worsing, director's comments.
Mine was combined with manager's question.
Mr. Eby.
Yes. This is about the Canada annexation and the Canada project.
Kenyatta.
Well, Crystal Lowe's.
That's not right here.
Greg Nestor's deal.
Yeah. The NCAC heard his presentation, and he essentially presented to them the same thing he presented to us, which is nothing. And he says, I want to work with you. And so they said, okay, we're going to form a committee. And they formed a committee with Richard Holguin being the chairman. Mm-hmm. And then they put out, they said, well, we want to invite the NCFD to be on this committee too. And all of a sudden, a bell went off in my head. Because I know we have a committee. And our committee's strict purpose is to let the applicant know what the requirements are, what the NCFD's requirements are for supplemental water. However, the NCAC committee is going to be more about what the community wants there in terms of design, facilities, etc. And I don't think that's any of the NCSD's business. I think our business is water-oriented, and I don't think we ought to be in the position of apparently trying to dictate to them what their design is going to be, because then they can come back to us and it's our responsibility, whatever they came up with, whether it's good or bad. So I want to recommend when they come to us and ask for a representative that we decline to send a official NCSD representative to their committee, because I don't think that's our place, and I think we could get in trouble if we were perceived as holding them out for certain things as NCSD people. We'll have the total number of things that we can hold them up for on the NCSD committee, that's the place to do it, not to be on the NCAC. So that's what I want to recommend when that comes up, and it hasn't come up yet, apparently.
Well, it really has.
Oh, it has?
I'll get that to that when.
And I might offer that our response could include if the NCAC would like to have the input of the district's policy or issues on this, I could attend a specific meeting and bring those issues to that subcommittee and something like that, but not, you know, no regular chair at the subcommittee meeting, nor would I want one. But in, you know, if they have questions about the district's policy and the procedure that's going to go forward, we could bring that to them at a specific meeting.
Okay, that was one item that I had. The other is, as I mentioned, I brought up before the NCAC the level 3 thing, and they barely passed it. I mean, there was a guy in the audience whose name I won't mention, but he gave them his interpretation of science, which was, well, wasn't a very good one. But some of the new members of the NCAC didn't understand, apparently, what I said, and they got onto the kick. What they were concerned about with level 3 was not whether there was water or not, but what would be the mitigation. And so we had a 50-50 vote on the thing, and Susie Hermrick was the tiebreaker. So the NCAC is recommending level 3 to the county. But the only reason that she did it was because she said, I won't vote for this unless the NCSD looks into this turnout that the water, the Pomo Valley Water Company has, looks into using that. And I said, well, I think the Cannon report, I think they're looking into the feasibility of that. And she said, oh, okay, so I'll vote for it. So now I hope that they did, as we asked them to do, look into the feasibility of using that.
We'll see in the draft. That report's been much more focused on the feasibility of alternatives crossing the river. The feasibility of using that turnout was handled in that Kennedy Jenks report that was done in 97 that we have on alternatives, where it talked about the political, now political nature of and difficulty of using that turnout. It's not as simple as working out a deal with Santa Maria, which is not simple to start with. We've got to work through a contract still with Santa Maria, but it would require that the approval of all other
The facts of it don't bother me. It's just the fact that we did address it that I want to make sure. Susie said that Donna Melskow came to her and said, we want to offer that to the NCSD. And so I said, okay, I think we're looking into it in our study. So if our study says we can or can't use it, well, that's what it is. But we need to address it, that's all. You just can't, because I don't know what to answer people when they ask me that question. And I'd like to have an answer.
I, again, I think the answer lies more in our recent...
I'll look at the Kennedy James.
Our most recent alternative study, and it discussed that in particular.
Okay.
And then we do have the other issues that I tried to make clear to folks when I spoke on this, is that a tap in that line, if we did accomplish that, and we have those political constraints or hurdles with it, we would not buy the same thing we're talking about buying from Santa Maria. We're buying from Santa Maria. Santa Maria's water, we're going to put ourselves on an equal right as any other Santa Maria customer, which is important to us because if this state gets into a statewide water emergency, everything I understand about the state water project is last on, first off. This pipeline, the flow through the pipeline may, you know, be drastically reduced or non-existent. In a case like that, the city of Santa Maria, we'd all be in a water emergency state, but the city of Santa Maria can only cut us back on our perceived contract to the level they cut their customers back. And so they'll be, of course, relying more on the greater basin groundwater or Twitchell water, whatever it is, and be obligated to sell us water or to deliver us water in accordance with our contract. And that's substantial. That's much more of a water right, in my mind, or a guarantee of water in the worst case.
It's amazing to me that the city agreed to do that. To actually restrict their own people, in effect, that's the net result of it.
There is a whiner clause in there. So just so everybody knows.
I'd sort of like to move on here.
I'm finished.
Mr. Wynn.
Are you finished? Okay. Five meetings or six meetings to tell you about quickly. First, tomorrow there are two meetings that are very significant for our district. The first will be, they're both in San Luis Obispo, one's from 9 to 12 in the morning. And that's at Grace Church on the corner of Osis and Pismo. Mm-hmm. And that will be the summary meeting for the 50-year planning events, which have been held here and in Templeton. And they're going to put them all together there tomorrow morning. In the afternoon, from 1 to 3, there will be a meeting of the task force that was formed by the REC to discuss the project priorities for the earworm or integrated regional water management plan for this entire county, part of which, of course, does include us. That'll be held at the library, City Library, from 1 to 3. Unfortunately, by the way, I'm sorry to report to you that when they laid out the priority meetings, none of us were able to attend. We all had conflicts. But they ended up saying that the highest priorities would be given to those projects that had completed their EIR. So we went from number 2 in priority only after Nacimiento down to about 8 or 10. We're really off the chart as far as likely projects. Whether that's reversible or not, I have no way of knowing. And staff may be able to add something to that.
I can't add anything to it other than it's just my observations that at this level of grant funding, the EIRs, from the state's perspective, are given the highest level of... I'm sure that requirement of having the EIR done was a state requirement as opposed to a local...
Anyway, that will be from 1 to 3 tomorrow, and if there's any wiggle room in that, or if there's any negotiations possible, I would hope that we would be able to do so, because staff are positively oriented toward us getting the water. There's no hostility there, but I can tell. On Thursday the 17th, a week from today, there'll be a meeting in Templeton at the Templeton CSD, and it's actually the North County Water Planning Task Force that normally meets, but they will be talking about both Nacimiento and other Prop 50 funding. It's going to be a combined meeting with members of the RAC and that task force. I'll be going up for it. I'm not sure what time it starts. It's in the morning at 9, I think. But they haven't confirmed that yet. On Thursday the 24th, 2 weeks from today, from 12 to 1:30 in this place, a county planning staff, Chuck Stevenson in particular, is going to be addressing but anybody from the public who attends here, as well as members of the advisory council, about their understanding of multifamily housing and multi-use. And my concern in that is directly water-related, in that they're opining that multi-use can be superimposed or integrated with existing zoning without a GPA and without an environmental determination. And I question whether that kind of an increase should go unchallenged. Again, this is what I understand. We need to be there and listen to what he has to say. He may say something very different, of course. But that will be 2 weeks from today, from 12 to 1:30. It's postponed. And by the way, it was postponed, and I noticed that although he was sick and was postponed, the report on it was still published in the Tribune the next day. So somebody's telling somebody what they think is going to happen. On Tuesday, the 29th of March, from 7 to 8:30 in the morning, the Chamber of Commerce will have their monthly breakfast for members and anyone else who wishes to attend. The speaker this month is John Scardino, who's going to be talking about the Woodlands and sort of the pace of the Woodlands, how it's going to shape up, and how that will affect Napomo.
What date is that?
That's Tuesday, the 29th, 7 a.m., 7 to 8:30. And you're all certainly welcome to attend. Glad to have you. And the last one I have to report is Wednesday, April 6th, from 1:30 to 3, the Water Resource Advisory Council will meet in its monthly meeting in San Luis Obispo at the library. Because the Board of Supervisors has postponed their consideration of the RMS, we will have that agendized. And it is my hope that the RAC will reaffirm their support for level 3, and I tried to get it on the agenda. I can tell you that Paavo Ogren was opposed to agendizing it in our last meeting, and blocked it from being put on. And for that reason, I am talking to some supervisors to make sure that the agenda reflects the committee and not what staff would like the committee to say.
That's April 6th.
Yes, it's Wednesday's 6th. And that's it.
Okay, well, let me zip through mine so we can move into closed session. With regards to the trash can issue, I have the catalogs. I will be meeting with the Old Town group tomorrow, and we will get the catalog, the trash can, the color. And after you come back from vacation, so we can move forward on that. As Michael pointed out, we will be looking at our allocation ordinance at the April 13th meeting, since that's about 6 months. Napomo Creek Watershed Steering Committee, we have come up with a final table of contents for the management plan. Regarding the Kenyatta Specific Plan Committee, which Richard Holguin is chairing, Susie called me, and I will be participating on that from the standpoint of landscaping, not from the standpoint of that's too many homes or they ought to look like that or anything else, but just simply from a water usage standpoint for landscaping.
Not an NCSD representative?
Not. You're always an NCSD representative, yeah, when you go to these things, because you're NCSD. People look at you and they see NCSD written all over you. But I said, that's all I can do with regards to that. You know, I may say, well, you know, I don't think the architecture looks too hot, but you know, I'm not influencing the number of units, and that's the key thing. But strictly from a landscaping more standpoint, which obviously, you know, you guys are going to be in that too.
It's since the water demand.
But anyway, so she wanted me on it because I was on the TEF Street Design Plan Committee. And I have one other item, one other item, and I want to, you know, it's in our bylaws, and I just want to reiterate it, that all requests for staff time need to go through the general manager. You know, if you call and you happen to reach the person that you think would do it anyway, talk to Mike first. Talk to Mr. LeBrun first, please. Thank you. And that's all I had. So, Mr. Seitz, closed session announcements.
Yes.
Is there any public comment on closed session items? Seeing none, Mr. Seitz.
Yes. There's only two items that we believe will be discussed in closed session. And this is where we want to take them. One is the summit station. This is agenda item number 3, pending litigation. This is the Pomo Community Service District versus the County of San Francisco. This is the summit station land use ordinance. And then labor negotiations, contract negotiations, 6-month performance review of general manager. General manager is an unrepresented employee, just for the record, and the district negotiator is the president, Mr. Verheilich. If one or two must be put on by anybody, I don't think staff has anything to report on.
I did have a call with Mr. Martin this morning. So I have a very brief update. But
okay, so let's go. And then the third item will be conference with legal counsel, pending litigation. This is Santa Maria Vista. I'm sorry, this is the number one on the agenda, the Santa Maria Valley groundwater litigation versus the Public Community Service District and a variety of other defendants in Santa Maria County.
Okay, now we can open it to public comment on closed session items. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board, and we will now go into closed session.